Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Anyways, hey, we're going to have a great show for you guys. Man, I almost didn't even make it, man. I tell you the truth, I locked myself out of my house. Can you believe that? I was rushing to get home, and I have to take off my overalls and stuff in the garage because, you know, what I do for a living. So running in here, and at the same time, I was texting Marlene, because she's going to be coming on the show in about four more minutes here. And I end up closing the door on myself, locking myself out. So I had to climb through my window, you know, do what I needed to do to get on the air. It was cutting close. And like always, Gabriel Montoya is cutting close as well. He's running a little bit late. But we got a lot of people who are going to be coming through here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Hey, be sure to download our app. You know, I know a lot of folks sometimes they say they have to go directly to the website to tune in, and that, you know, they have to either wait to listen to us on the radio here on Leaving the Ring Radio until they walk into their home. But now, you know, if you have an Android or an iPhone, you can literally download us so that you can tune in. You won't miss any part of the show. So be sure to go to Google Store, which would be – and you have to type in all capital letters, capital L-I-I-T-R. You're not going to find us at Leaving the Ring Radio. It's just too much to type in. Figure go, you know, a shortcut would be capital L-I-I-T-R and download it. It's a really good feature. We're going to be throwing some new boxing radio shows, new content, new video, videos so you can tune in and watch. And it's only going to be exclusively for the mobile app. So if you want to tune in and listen, we're bringing some shows like The Chronicles of the Ring and The Boxing Blitz. Noche de Boxeo will be back, and some other things that we have in the works. A Gabriel Montoya Hour, and you have to download the app. So we're gonna give another shot to my co-host before our first guest calls in, and she's an Olympian, and she's there's been a lot of ruckus right now, some few, which I think women's boxing's been missing. You know, women boxing's been missing that type of attention. And Kalisha West and Ava Knight, who are, Kalisha West, Southern girl, and Southern California girl, and you got the Northern California girl, Ava White, going at, I don't know, the attack of Twitter, right? And when I was talking to Marlena, she was saying the Twitter zone, that's what she was calling it, and she was pretty much giving me her side of the story, which was a lot of info. And I was like, hold up, wait a minute. Let's get this all over the air. Let's give people a chance to kind of understand where your stance is at about the whole situation and how we kind of feud up. Because I was kind of new to this feud. I was kind of new what was going on. And so as soon as she calls in, we'll break right into that. But then we got to talk a little bit about Adrian Broner and Gavin Reese. Gavin Reese was opening up, and he was having some success. He was the busy bee. Definitely was the busy bee in the match. But Adrian Broner, just to step up a class, and more we get a chance of watching this kid do his craft in the ring, the more and more you have to be convinced that he's probably going to be the new superstar in boxing. In terms of this, you know, which, you know, I've had a few fans hitting me up, and they're like, you really think so? I mean, you don't think that a Latino is going to uprise, or maybe another Filipino where everybody's going to cling on? And I said, well, as an American superstar, which is very needed, Broner definitely has that. He has that type of, I don't know if you want to call it charisma or what you would want to call it, but he definitely has something there that intrigues us. He definitely does have something there that's making us turn our heads and getting us to sit down and watch him. He's selling out in his hometown, and that's always the big plus. You know, I mean, how many fighters are out there that are literally able to really sell out a venue in their hometown? And Broner's doing it, and he's an American that's doing it. So HBO and everybody else obviously are seeing that. Golden Boy is definitely seeing that this guy is a draw. Not only is he a draw with his boxing skills, but his personality definitely is selling tickets. Whether you hate him or love him, there's no in-between with Broner. And we definitely saw that with Gavin Reese. Gavin Reese, like I said, going back with that fight, he was having some minor success. He was being the busy bee. But the sting definitely belonged to Broner. That sting was definitely there for Broner. And he was able to take him out a little earlier than what I was thinking. Actually, like 10 rounds. I thought that Reese was going to give him a little work, give him a workshop, but it didn't turn out that way. Broner was being the mechanic, and he was looking good at doing it. We're going to have Freddie Roach, Tavares Cloud, and we're going to be having Michael Medina, who's going to be facing Willie Nelson March 1st on the first promotional card that 50 Cent is doing in his collaboration with Lou DiBella. So we got a packed show. Then we got some Iron Boys promotion guys coming on, and Michael Hunter, who's also an Olympian, he's going to be coming through, talking some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. And as usual, we're going to have our fight schedule. Again, if you haven't had the chance to download the app, you got to do it. Go down, download the app, Leaving the Ring, all capital letters, LIII.
TR.
And I'm just making sure. Let's patch in our first guest. I believe we have her on the line. Marlene, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Are you enjoying that Bay Area weather?
Yeah, it's different from Texas, for sure.
Well, way different. You can't even put gel in Texas. What are you talking about in your hair? It gets super hot over there, and everything melts off. You know, my family are from Tejas, Eagle Pass, Texas. But let's talk about this whole thing that started with the Twitter beef. But let's go back, because when you informed me about what was going on, you know, it was really new to me. I just thought it just kind of stemmed maybe from a couple of days, but we're talking about a month back, right?
More, yeah, a little bit more. A lot of people didn't know till yesterday what was going on, because I went off, you know, a little bit more than I should have, but it had been inside me for a while. She, Ava Knight, got upset about something I tweeted to a fan about a month and a half ago, and she repeatedly tweeted at me and was writing things about me and was really rude about everything. I apologized about the statement I made, and she didn't want to accept it. She wanted to be really rude about it. And I held it in. I didn't say anything because I don't talk. I'm not the kind of person who talks, you know, over Twitter or says anything. You know, I talk in the ring, and I know what I do, and that's it. And I figured, well, I'm going to come to the Bay Area. I'm going to get in the ring with her, and I'm going to show everybody why I said what I said. And I'm going to show her, you know, why I wasn't talking. And now I'm here in the Bay Area, and I told her, well, let's get in the ring and let's bar. And she kept saying no. And before I tweeted yesterday, a month and a half, we've been asking her to come spar me, And we're gonna be an open sparring session. We're going to let media see it, and everybody could see what happens.
Right.
And she kept saying no and kept saying no. I even offered to pay for training expenses to get her here, gas money, you know, hotel money if she needed it, and she still said no, and it's because we've already sparred twice, and I had a very easy time, and I don't think she wants to be exposed. So since she kept denying me, I had no choice but to bring it to Twitter and to bring it to media like she did, because I figured, well, if I embarrass you enough and you call yourself a pro, you call yourself a boxer,
right,
then you'll get in the ring. And she's still saying no, and she's hiding behind her pro status. And what a lot of people don't understand, and that's one reason why I wanted to get on the on your talk show, is because the media, you know, I'm not really confrontational, like, to just be talking, but it's to explain to people the difference between women's boxing and men's boxing. If you know about boxing, you know that in men's boxing, yeah, you're an amateur, and then you become professional, and then you're a prize fighter, and you're elite. As for women, it's the opposite. The competition is a lot more difficult in the amateurs for the women than it is as a pro. a lot of the pro fighters don't have as much experience as the girls and the amateurs. There's a lot of really good amateurs who don't want to go pro because you won't make any money. I think Ava Knight, I mean, I don't even know what she's making, but I'm sure it's not much. I mean, I support myself, and I'm very well off as an amateur doing what I do with endorsements.
So let me ask you this. You don't actually know how much you make. So do you think that's fair to say something like that then? To say that?
Well, I mean, I've heard. No, I mean, I've heard price ranges before.
Uh-huh.
So I'm well aware. I mean, I'm not going to say an exact number because I don't, but I've heard a price ranges. I've heard range of what he makes. So,
and the bottom line is you're making, and hi, Marlene. For those tuning in, this is Marlene Esparza, one of our first medalists in the Olympics. This is Gabriel Montoya with Max Boxing and my co-host Dave Duenas. I mean, you're making a lot of cash, and I don't usually like to talk about people's cash, but you're making a lot of money the only way really a female fighter can make a lot of money, which is endorsements, right? I mean,
right.
The purses aren't – even for, I would say – Ann Wolf versus Leila Ali, that probably would have been the first big million-dollar fight, and it probably would be splitting $1 million.
Right.
Not, you know?
Right.
And I get exactly what you're saying. What do you think ultimately is going to happen between you guys? Continue with what you were saying.
Well, no, I was going to say that, yeah, you know, like, I don't like to talk about it either, but the truth is it would be a step down for me. It would be a really bad decision. For me to go professional as of right now, because one, I still want to get a gold medal, and two, my endorsements are not going to want me as a professional. My endorsements want me as an Olympic athlete, and I feel like when I'm done doing what I need to do in the Olympic level, well, then, you know, I didn't want to go pro because I don't see the point in it. That's not my goal. I'm trying to do what I want to do for me. But if when something like this comes up and I'm being insulted, like I said with Ava, the only reason I'm doing this or talking about it or even getting into an argument with her, which is something I wouldn't want to do, is only because I feel extremely disrespected and I don't appreciate it. I apologize for what I said. I try to leave it alone. And, you know, she didn't want to accept it. She wanted to use me as a way to get more, you know, more publicity or whatever it is. But the bottom line is I don't need Ava Knight. Ava Knight needs me. And I'll fight her when I'm done doing what I'm doing in the Olympics, and I'll do it for free because it's not about that to me. It's about respect. And I don't deserve anything that she's doing or saying. Like, I apologize. You know, I said the wrong things, and I didn't mean it in
right.
any way. I don't have any problems with professional boxers. I'm sparring Karina Moreno. I'm sparring Melissa McMorrow. Both of them are world champions. Both of them, you know, they respect me. I respect them. Has nothing to do with that. And if I were to get in the ring with her, I already have twice. It was sparring, but no matter which way you cut it, you know, boxing's boxing. I mean, she barely touched me. I mean, she's a good fighter. She has nice fundamentals. I'm not saying that she's a bad fighter. I don't think she is. She's, you know, worthy of competing with, of course. But I know who I am, and I know what I did, and so does she. And that's why she doesn't want to spar. She doesn't want anybody to see it. She keeps hiding behind her pro status. But, I mean, why not? If she said she was talking crap to me for women's boxing, for pro boxing, for all the athletes out there, well, then do it. Get in the ring with me and shut me up. Show everybody why you say you are who you are. But why is this amateur, like she's saying, why am I the only one doing it? I mean, it makes no sense. And it just, it gets me irritated more than anything. And a lot of people don't understand the situation. I would love to just say, oh, yeah, let me go pro and go do it. But as far as career-wise and what I'm trying to do in the Olympics, it's not something I need to do right now.
How hard is it to... You had all that build up, and you were really one of the darlings in terms of marketing and in terms of the team. It seemed like you were very high profile, and you got all those endorsements. How hard was it to just come out with the bronze, but then to kind of get yourself all back together and now begin that slow build towards the next Olympics?
That's difficult. You know, with being a female boxer, and then with having as much media, you know, I'm kind of I'm kind of experiencing this for the first time for everybody. You know, there's no really anybody I could say, well, they did it this way, or I'm following in their footsteps, and this is how they handled the situation, so let me do it that way.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of going in blind. So it's difficult, but I love the sport of boxing, and that's all I try to focus on. I love what I do. I love the ins and outs. I love the good and the bad about boxing. And, you know, with all the publicity or without it, I would still love the sport. So I just try to focus on that, try to make myself a better person. And if people appreciate it and they want to support me, then I love them for it. And if they don't, I mean, not everybody's going to like me all the time.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, you said something that's really interesting, and you're absolutely right. There is no guideline to follow, because there hasn't been anybody in that kind of position where you're at now. So in terms of something like that, you know, when you say, like, you know, there's really not a lot of money for the female pro boxing, but with the Olympics and the exposure you got, you think that you can, you know, like yourself and the other women that have made it in the Olympics and got, you know, a medal, do you guys think you guys can change something like that, though? And you know, Evan Knight kind of sees that. I mean, can you really be upset on what she's trying to do, which is get a fight with you, which would be a very high-profile fight?
Yeah, I mean, I understand what she's trying to do. I just don't really understand why she, you know, she nagged at me, and then I'm here and I'm saying, okay, let's do it. I mean, I can spar you today and fight you another day too. That's fine. But she knows what's going to happen, and it's more of like she talks and talks about herself, but then she doesn't want to show it. She doesn't want to show anything about it. And I do think that women's pro boxing can pick up. I do. I just feel that right now the people who are going to do it, like me and, like, you know, my fellow Olympians and all the other girls around the world who are really, you know, really, really good, when we decide to go pro, or if anybody decides to go pro, then the competition will pick up and there will be a lot of fights that people want to see. But if I go pro, you know, tomorrow to fight Ava Knight, and then I fight Ava Knight, and then what? You know, there's nobody. I need other athletes to join in with me. And right now, I don't see anybody going pro. I don't see any of the Olympians going pro. So
right.
it's in itself, because we all know that if we go pro, it's a bad decision to make, because the professional level it's not worth it right now.
And in a sense, the Olympics are going pro, because I think, as I understand it, the headgear's coming off for the next Olympics, right? And the rules are going to be more professional as, like, the World Series of Boxing and all that kind of takes hold. At least that's what I was told. Is that true?
Right. It's true, but only the scoring system for the men and the women are pro scoring. But only the men are allowed to take off their headgear. They're making the women still wear their headgear, which I disagree with. I don't like the idea of the headgear, but I feel like if we're in the sport, it doesn't matter our gender, we need to have the same rules, and that's just something that the women are going to have to fight. But we have to fight a lot, so it's probably going to, you know, we're probably going to have to make a fuss about it and
right.
get it fixed.
I've always just felt fighting with headgear, you know, sparring with it, it really affects the way you fight. It kills your peripheral vision, and some people get a false sense of security when they fight with the bar across their face. I don't. What do you think? What do you use? Do you like the open face, or do you use the bar?
No, I use open face. I try to keep it as light as possible because, like you said, peripheral. I don't even like cheek protectors. I try to keep it as open as possible so I can see. And, I agree with that as a professional fighter. But, you know, you got to protect your head as much as you can and save it for the fight. So I understand why people do it. But it's all mental. You know, if you get your mindset that the bar across the face works, then you're going to be fine. Get in your mind, if you get mentally that the bar across your face is not going to work, then it's not going to work. It's all a mental. It's all what you're comfortable with and what you feel like is going to make you succeed is always the key.
Before we let you go, because we're going to be having Freddie Roach on with us in a short bit right now, What is the message you want for Evan Knight, and also too with Kalisha West, because I saw that she got involved kind of with the talk and conversation of what was happening between yourself and Evan Knight.
You know, Kalisha West, I want to laugh at it a little bit, because obviously just jumping on this for no reason. It has nothing to do with her. So I'm not even going to touch on that. But with Ava Knight, what I would like to tell her was that I apologize for what she took wrong, and I did what I was supposed to do. I asked her to get in the ring with me because she was saying that I was disrespecting women's boxing, and I told her, well, if I'm doing that, well, then get in the ring with me and shut me up and show me then. And she
right.
wants to hide behind her pro status. But I don't care what she says. Just because she signed a paper that made her pro makes her no better than me. She has less fights than me, less experience, and she couldn't even win a national tournament. I've won, like, over 16. She knows, and I know, what happened when we sparred, and we both know why she's not getting in the ring. And if she wants to deny it, then get in the ring.
Well, there you go. There you
Straight
go.
Up.
Straight up and everything. And, you know, hopefully, I think Eva might be, I don't know, but she might be on the switchboard. We have a lot of calls right now. Marlene, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us. I know you have, you know, you're training and you're doing your thing down over here in the Bay Area. We'll catch up with you a little later.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Coming on. I can't wait to have you back on and go into more of an extended session. We kind of mutual people that we talk to, and I'm really curious about the Donaire stuff, but I'm glad we got a chance to get this all cleared up. But nice to finally meet you, Marlene, and good luck to you.
And she hung up already and stuff. So
damn
anyways, Fife, I know.
Damn it, Dave, you could have just said that. You're talking to air, brother.
No,
you're talking to anybody.
I just looked at it really quick, and you know, Chad really dropped off and stuff.
She's a pro with the media, you know, just like, and gone.
Well, you know what she told me in a private conversation? She said, I really don't want to deal with the media. I don't want to do that. That's another reason why she didn't want to turn pro. So, you know, and I kind of respect that and stuff. But, you know, at the same time, you know, like, I've watched, like, you know, Kalisha West and Eva Knight, and these are athletes. They're, you know, these women are athletes in their own right, you know. Why don't they get the exposure and the amount of money that they should be getting? I have no clue yet. I mean, we're starting to see a big change in how these women are bringing it, you know. And
they're on the line actually. Freddie and Marie are texting me.
Okay, let me patch in. Make sure that they're Freddie. Are you there with us, brother?
There they are.
Hold on one moment for Freddie. Okay.
Freddie.
Hey,
James. On the line. Hey, Freddie, how you doing, brother?
Good.
Hey, thanks again, man, for taking the time. It's always fun when you come on the ring with us and talk some boxing.
No problem.
I'm going to jump right in with it. Thanks for coming on, Freddie. This is Gabriel and Dave. Ruslan Provodnikov, Tim Bradley. I got a chance to watch you guys spar and work today. Can you break down how you feel where you are in camp and talk about the fight a little bit?
Well, you know, we're boxing about 8 rounds right now. We're right in the middle of camp, and we're doing really well. We had a couple of good sparring partners, some fast guys, some tough guys. You know, we're ready for Bradley, the one that wants to fight us. Or the one who wants to run like he did with Manny Pacquiao. So either one, we're ready for. And his sparring has been going really well.
Is there anything that you learned watching Bradley's your second time getting at him that you could implement with Ruslan? Or is it just completely two different fighters?
No, the thing is with Bradley, you know, he can come in and be aggressive and try to bang with you. I've seen him in that mode, or he can move in box also. He moves a lot better than I thought he would, and I think once he feels Bruce's power, he'll start to move on us, and what we have to do is cut the ring off and make that ring a smaller box and set traps for him, and that's what we've been working on, and Bruce's doing really well with it.
Is, you know, with what I found interesting today about watching the sparring was that you started with a shorter guy, a guy that was shorter than Ruslan, and then the guys got taller and faster and more awkward. Is that just still go in line with your philosophy of giving him just different looks? It doesn't necessarily have to look like Bradley?
Yeah, you know, the thing is I expect Bradley to come out and a little bit heavy and try to bang with Bruce Lynn. And I think once he feels the power in the early rounds, I think he'll decide to move. So that's why I'm going with the bigger, taller guys. They use the jab a little bit more and try to box a little bit more. So there is a little bit of strategy behind that. And, the big punches are really, Sue Croft is very strong, and he's great for the start of the fight. But then for the middle and late rounds, I need more of the boxer type, I think.
Freddie, let me ask you this. This is the second time around, with Timothy Bradley. Obviously, a lot of folks in media felt that with Manny Pacquiao, you guys won that fight. How much is it for you to get Timothy Bradley back in the ring? Because I remember a while back you said, with Manny Pacquiao, you wanted the rematch, but instead you guys had to settle for the Marquez fight because Manny wanted that one a lot more.
Yeah, the thing is, it was a bad call, but, these things happen in boxing. I have nothing personal against Bradley. He seems like a very nice man. He's got a nice family. The thing is, I'm training my fighter to win the fight, and whatever it takes to win, that's what we're going to do.
With Timothy, even his trainer was saying the right hand was the success. And I've even heard him say, and a few other people even say, that the right hand is always going to be the success against you. Is that something that you guys have worked on with your fighters? Is having a defense against the right hand?
Well, usually right hands work with southpaws, and Manny Pacquiao was a southpaw, of course, and they had some success with the right hand. I think they landed like three of them in the fight. But, the thing is, Ruslan's not a southpaw, so he doesn't get hit with right hands quite as much as southpaws do. The feet aren't aligned in the same way, so it'll have no relevance in this fight. His right hand, he's just not strong enough to deal with my guy. My guy's a better puncher, and we'll prove that.
Is there a puzzle with Bradley, you think? I mean, the puzzle with Marquez, but is there a big mystery to Bradley's style, in your opinion?
No, he's very good at what he does, and, he's very good with his head. When he comes in head first, he comes in low with that head, tries to head by you. So we're well prepared for whatever he brings.
I like that. He's really good with his head.
I was curious too. We saw this kind of a story come out the last couple of days, and you were talking about the knockout with Pacquiao, and that you noticed it was the feet they kind of got jammed up. And now, was that an observation you made a while ago, and you just happened to answer that with a reporter, or is that something that you kind of saw new? People act like it was a big revelation.
No, the thing is, if you watch the replay on the overhead, I didn't see it during the fight though, because it was a lot going on, of course, and me working the corner. But on the overhead view, you could see when Manny stepped on his foot, and where his opponent, Morales, pulled his foot back, and Manny fell into the punch. It was a very well calculated move, and when a southpaw and a righty fight each other, they step on each other's feet all the time. And mostly, Manny complains about Marquez stepping on his feet. And the thing is, this time Manny stepped in with the jab, and he ended up on top of his foot because the lead foots are together when the southpaw and the righty are fighting. And he just ended up in a bad position. But the surprising part is that Marquez knew what to do with it. He pulled it and threw the right hand. It was a perfect shot. And it might be one of the best moves I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm really curious. Yeah, it was kind of, to me, it showed just kind of the randomness. I mean, they fought so many rounds. And then for that kind of freak moment to happen, he lands a perfect shot off that. I saw the foot move. I thought Manny kind of jammed into him and pitched forward, and that's what did it. But it just speaks to, these guys are always going to be tough. Do you expect this fifth fight to come off, or do you think that Marquez is going to run away with the clear victory?
No, I don't think Marquez really has anywhere to go. The thing is, where can he make the money that he can make with Manny Pacquiao?
That's true.
I mean, he's got a. He might be, both guys are getting close to the end of their careers. they've got to make as much money as they can to support their family for the rest of time. So I see the fight being negotiated out, and I think he will come to the table, and that's the fight we want. And I talked to Manny about that, and that's the fight Manny wants, and we want revenge. I mean, the thing is, we gave him a shot, so I think he'll give us a shot. And again, he's not going to make that kind of money anywhere else. So I don't see it going any other way. I think in September we will have a Pacquiao Marquez five.
Let me ask you this, because the last time we had you on, and we was talking about that fight. Lee was leading into that fight, and I had asked you about the strategy, and you had talked about being more aggressive, going out there, and it seemed to work. But I had told you my concern was, why divert from the original plan that you guys have been kind of successful with? Do you think that the aggressive to which you guys were applying, that was just a major mistake, and you need to go back to what you guys were doing before?
No, I don't think so. I think we're fighting the best fight we've fought yet. And the thing was, the third fight was a little bit boring, and I hate boring fights.
Yeah, I thought that was a great fight. I don't know what you're talking about, Freddie.
You know, the third fight was a great boxing match, yes, but yeah. it was a little bit boring, and that's why, you know, the fourth fight didn't seem like it had that much luster to it, because people weren't really, big on it. But the pay-per-view did do well. But the thing is, since the fourth fight was so great, the fifth fight, I think the fifth fight between Manny and Marquez is bigger than Manny and Mayweather. I think this is going to be the biggest fight, one of the biggest pay-per-view fights of all time.
I kind of agree with that, because there's a lot of questions now. You wonder, you know, is what's Manny going to be like? And that fight, it did seem like you guys were on your way to a stoppage. You were busting him up, and then boom, it happened. You know, you and I have talked about this in the past, that you agree that a long beatdown loss is worse than what happened with Manny, which was he was doing well and then he got caught. He probably won't even remember the moment. Have you talked with him and gotten any sense of him, how he feels?
Yeah, you know, I talked to Manny, and he's very, you know, one thing about Manny Pacquiao, he's a very realistic person. He told me, if you don't think you can lose in this sport, you pick the wrong sport. And I remember when he lost to Morales back in his first loss with us together. He was very sportsmanlike, and he just said, you know, we'll train harder and get better next time. And this time it was the same thing. He handled losing very well. He knows it has to be a winner and has to be a loser. He knows he got beat this time. And he'll do everything possible to not make that happen, let that happen again. So he's very realistic. He understands the winner and the loser in there, and he lost that time, so he needs to work harder to make sure that doesn't happen again.
And last thing, kind of for me on that subject, it seemed like there was so much pressure to keep winning. To keep winning so you could preserve that Mayweather fight. Is there a little bit of pressure off now?
Probably, you know, the thing is, Marquez might end up being the favorite going into this one, a little less pressure and so forth. But the thing is, I think, you know, again, we have a good gameplay with Marquez. But, you know, the thing is, that movie made we never... We didn't think of that move so much, because mostly, man, he's stepping on Manny's feet, because he's from the southpaw side, and Manny's not stepping on his feet too many times. So I learned a great move in that fight, and if it does happen, we will use a similar move to that also. I mean, so I just... Yeah, maybe a little bit of bad luck, but that's part of the game.
Yeah,
I have one more question before we let you go, Freddie. You know, last year was a bad year. You know, and my question is, how do you feel that, like with Amir Khan, his comments, leaving you, and how does that as a trainer? You know, everything was going so well, and the last time we had you on, you were like, I need this win with Manny, I really do, because you like to win. You know, you hate to lose. How does that affect you How does that affect you? That you, we're seeing so many people now kind of turn against you of what's been going on.
You know, the thing is, for me, you know, for me, I mean, you know, I had a couple of years there where I had like 38 wins and 2 losses and stuff. We had some great years and so forth. But, you know, the racehorses are getting a little bit older, and we're slowing down a little bit. But the thing is, it pushes me to work harder. And the thing is, I work harder, and I get some good young prospects coming up. You know, Ruslan's coming on, and then Frankie Gomez, of course, a great prospect. And, you know, we're starting to generate some good young talent out there. But the thing is, you know, I don't think Manny Pacquiao is quite finished yet. And if he was, I'd be the first one to tell him. And we do have an agreement when I tell him that he will retire. And I want to take a look at him in training camp first and see, make sure everything's okay. And it does drive me to work harder. And, you know, financially it was a great year, but win-loss-wise it wasn't too good a year. So, we're going to hang in there. We're going to get some more wins, I promise.
Yeah, it's up and it's down, right? I mean, there's always an ebb and a flow to this game. And, you know, you just seem to be taking it really great stride, man. It was really nice to see it again today, and I'll be back for that camp to watch. I'm excited about the Provodnikov Bradley. A lot of people aren't. I think he's got a great chance.
I do, too. I think it's going to be a great fight, and I hope all the fans that come out to Home Depot Center to see this one, because it's going to be a hell of a fight.
I hope so. I hope so, man. Anyways, I wish you all the luck in the world, Freddie. Thanks again for coming on Leaving the Ring. It's always a pleasure when you come on and talk to us.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, you heard it here on Leaving the Ring Radio, Freddie Roach saying that Timothy Bradley is very good with his head. And the Marquez fight, he believes that Manny Pacquiao, the fifth time around is going to be happening in around, I believe he said September, right, Gabriel? So, you shouldn't have missed it here on Leaving the Ring. Hey, download. Make sure you download it. You know, you got to download our app and stuff. Like I said, we're going to be having a lot of new things that are going to come up on our mobile app. Here's the thing, too. Like, to hear what guests are going to be on, to know about what guests are going to be on Leaving the Ring, we sent that out on the mobile app before anything else. So you get a chance to find out who's going to be on the show before anybody else finds out on Twitter and Facebook, and any other news as well, breaking news. If, you know, Gabriel Montoya has a breaking news, it's going to hit the mobile app before anything else. Also, like I said, shows, radio shows that we're bringing, they're going to be a lot different. A lot of different things that we're able to do with the mobile app. And you guys are going to be really surprised, and it's going to throw you back. You're going to be like, wow, this is great and stuff. Like I said, Gabriel Montoya is going to be working on his own show. Montoya is going to have his own show, and it's going to be really interesting. I'm actually really excited to see what Gabriel's going to be bringing to the table, man. It's going to be lot of fun. A lot of fun.
I'm excited to decide to see what I'm going to do. But no, I'm kind of putting it all together still, and I'm really excited that we're – you know, we don't spend a lot of time talking about how great we are on this show. We just try to do new things. We were the first guys to do the live stream. You know, I did the fighter versus writer thing, and we did a live stream version and then an in-studio thing. And that was very much, you know, a part of this evolution, I think. We plugged it here on the show. It was one of the first things that we did
right.
When I caught on. It's just, I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and tell everybody that we're the best show in the world, but I will say this. We're one of the few shows, if I would say maybe one of the show could say that they do this, of the Blog Talk guys. I mean, I know there's the Brain Damage Lounge and the Boxing Crab and those other shows. And actually, the Boxing Crab does pretty well. They do have guys that actually go to the gyms and report. But that's probably the only other show that does. I mean, most of the other ones, you know, they just kind of take shots and they watch fights on TV, and that's about it, and that's fine. But don't try to pretend like you do what we do. Like, I'm running late for the show today because I was at the gym watching a sparring session after my own training session, and then I rushed home to get here to talk boxing for 3 hours. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying there's a difference between kind of working in the industry, talking with promoters and managers, watching the fighters, the trainers. That level I think that's something we always have tried to deliver to you here on Leave It in the Ring. And really, you know, the more I look at the internet and like shows like the Brain Damage Lounge and others, they kind of take shots at me, particularly our show, but they don't invite me on as a guest. They don't want to actually deal with me in facts and intelligence, like I talked about last week in my little mini rant in the first hour. Those shows, yeah, you can watch a lot of fights, but there's a big difference. And like, there's only one guy on the internet really that watches a ton of fights that you think of as the fight guy. That's Ryan Bivens, but he also fights. He actually gets in the ring. He trains. That guy kind of devotes his life to boxing.
Right.
I respect that guy. I kind of misinterpreted him early on. I feel bad about that. I get him now. He's all about it, and he actually goes in there and fights. That guy would say, okay, you watch a lot of fights, and I will trust you on what you're saying. Whereas, you know, I don't always agree with him, but I trust that he's informed. These other guys, I mean, maybe you watch the fights on the weekends or whatever, but it's just a whole different level.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of tired of all the negativity and all the little backbiting. I know I'm giving those guys nicknames, but I'm doing that because I refuse to plug their show. So you can figure out who I'm talking about.
You know, listen, this is the thing, is that I've been noticing a lot of negativity, and I've noticed that a lot of people are taking shots. They don't tag me, my name or nothing like that, and I understand. It's all good. And I understand that they have their beef with you. The only thing I got to say is, look, is I've helped out a lot of people in this industry, whether they want to admit it or not. I have. Talking about doing the first, and I never brag about it or nothing like that. You know, only the people that are very close to me, you know, we'll talk about just trying to take it to the next level, because I always felt, and I stand by what I believe, is that boxing doesn't get any certain type of love from the mainstream media. So we have to create that, you know? So when I hear other shows that go, when they talk to me personally and they go, look, man, you inspired me to do something like that, that it means a lot to me. But then it hurts my feelings when they do go and take a shot at me after, when they just told me something up front. I've given guys names. I've given guys time of my money to put them on my platform. I've done a lot, and it's cool. I understand. I get it. There's competition. I understand. Just like, you know, what right now we're seeing right now with the female fighters right now, you know, I can't blame Eva Knight. I can't blame Kalisha West, because if there's competition, you want to be the best, you know, and you got to go for it. I understand that, and it's great. No harm, no foul. Download the app. I wish everybody the best. That's all I care about. I wish you guys all the best and stuff like that. And, you know, I've met some really great people in boxing. Two of my best friends come from boxing, you know, Blood, Marlon Jordan, who, you know, we started doing YouTube, and you know, Gabriel Montoya, two of my best friends have came out of this. And I met a lot of great people. And are there people out there have a different agenda? Absolutely. And some folks got things to say about you. And I'm not going to make this whole show about this and stuff like that, because we got some other things to talk about. We got some guests that are going to be coming on here on Leaving the Ring and stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. Let's pass this to Fight Fans really quick. Let's talk about this weekend fights here on Leaving the Ring. 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the Google Store app, which is going to be capital LIITR. And like I said, we shortened it out. We wanted to make it a whole, like, you got to type a whole bunch of stuff and all that, and you weren't going to find it. But I am finding out that some folks are saying, man, this is, you know, I can't find the show and stuff. So let's go with, really quick, with the people that have been holding on the most. I'm sorry, I apologize, we don't have Mr. David Chen. But I'm going to call out your area code. Right now I got two area codes of the same. So I'll call out the area code and the first three numbers. We're going to go with area code 510-682. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
I'm sorry, man. I'm just listening right now, bro.
Hey, brother. Thank you very much for tuning in. I'll put you back on hold. I'm going to go with area code, same area code, because they've been holding on for a very long time. Area code 510-378. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Okay, they're probably just tuning in and stuff. So we'll go with area code 7. I believe that's like in Puerto Rico or something like that. What's up, brother? You're on the line.
Yo, yo. What is going on with these people?
Wow. One of the originators from YouTube, Rob Riller. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Everything's good. What's up with you guys? See, you guys have come along quite well.
I don't know that. I don't know quite well, man. I don't know if you were listening earlier, man. I locked myself out of my house. I had to climb through my kid's bedroom. You know, fell flat on my face because I was in a rush and I was trying to take off my gear and I locked my garage door on myself. That's a fucking nub move. You know what I mean?
That's when those Tom Cruise movies come in handy. All those years, I watched those Tom Cruise movies.
And you know what? I was going to do a Tom Cruise move, you know, in Mission Impossible, which is like, you know, break the door. Dude, I as soon as I kicked the door, I felt the vibration run back into my hip, and it reminded me, bro, you're 40 years old. This ain't going to happen. It's just not going to work.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that somebody opened the door and you kicked them in the stomach. Wow. Thank God that didn't happen.
Hey, listen, I got an 11-year-old little boy. If anybody would open the door, it would have been him. It would have been the stomach. It would have been the face. You know what I mean? It would have been all bad.
Oh, man.
Tell us what's on your mind, man. I know you're one guy that I love hearing talk boxing and stuff and talk about graphics, one of the originators, you know, before anybody else was doing the promo boxing clips. You were the it factor.
Oh, yeah, I had to get off that. I let Gorilla Productions take over. You know, that's a lot of work. After a while, it gets time-consuming. But, no, Adrian Broner, you know, I'm not that – a lot of people hate him. A lot of people might think I would hate him. I love to hate the guy. It's actually somebody I enjoy just hating. Like, it's fun to watch. It's somebody I'll be late at night, I'll watch the interviews just to grow even more hate for him because it's just so entertaining. And he's very talented. But one thing I feel personally when he goes to fights, I personally don't see game plans. I see him just wanting to explode with physical athleticism. And it's been serving him well. But I want to see a fight that's going to put him into some type of mode where he's going to have a plan, an A, B, C plan, possibly where he's going to have to transition through. Because right now I don't see it. I see him having to take a chance at a big jump in competition. And Gavin Reese, I mean, are we really going to go from Gavin Reese to Matisse? I don't think so. Are we going to go from Gavin Reese to a possible Rios? But, you know, Rios might be too big for that. I don't think so. So I don't know who he's going to fight to do it. I do not want to see him beat up on Amir Khan, and I don't think Marquez should take that fight. Not that he would beat Marquez, but he might. But that's too much of a possible, you know, losing more than you could win for Marquez. So I don't know who he could fight. But the reffing in that fight was horrible. Something has to be doing with the reffing because there was things going on both sides. I appreciate the letting it fight, but, you know, you got to be stricter on the rules. Gavin Reese was about to lose the fight anyway, but that was just horrible.
And you watch the – for years, and everybody, I might as well just own it. Everybody thinks I'm a hater of Floyd, so I'm just going to go with the criticism without the disclaimer. But he's used that elbow for years, and it's illegal. It's not
right.
A legal move, you know.
Yes.
And I was actually – there's a great little video. You probably have seen it. It's like the 10 things that – 10 tricks that Floyd Mayweather does. And they're actually all very distinct. It's kind of funny because when you watch the video that says 10 tricks that Manny Pacquiao does, they all kind of blend into each other after a while. They all kind of look the same. But Floyd's are really, really specific. And one of them is the elbow. And he really pops people with it, kind of flips it up there as you're coming in. That's an illegal move, plus the forearm to the throat. That's an illegal move, and people, because he's a star, it's like refereeing Shaq. You know, he knocks people around or does something illegal. He's the star. You're not really going to call him for it. But you're right. We need more uniform guys. I'm curious to see who's going to be the ref for Bradley Provodnikov. Jack Reese or Pat Russell will be my two top guys for that one.
Another thing I wanted to mention is the style of the Philly show itself. I'm tired of the behind the head warnings. That is not a typical, you know, I'm going to give you my half my body style. That's basically I'm giving you 20% of my back, and, like, you know, the rest is, like, you know, hit it if you can without getting a warning. You know, basically, like, it completely takes the over and right out of the equation, because, you know, if you throw it, he might lean into it, and, you know, you're not going to get your power into it, because you're going to catch him with your forearm and get warned for a shot behind the head, which completely discourages a fighter. And then, you know, on top of that, you can risk headbutting if you come in too hard. You know, I'm not saying Victor Ortiz, because, you know, that was blatant, but, like, other fighters might come in too hard. You're risking the headbutt. On a fight, you'd probably be losing against that style anyway. So I think they do have to warn the fighter for turning into the punch instead of, you know, warning the other guy for throwing the punch. But aside from that, I just want to see Broner get a fight against somebody. I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody in that weight class. I do not want to see. If he fights Michael Capides, I don't want to see that. That's a whole bunch of beating up fighters in that lightweight right now. I don't think there's anybody there that can give him a match. He's going to have to definitely think about moving up. But, yeah, that's basically it for me. I just don't really have much else to say.
No, there's interesting points, you know, and it's all this whole thing, we're probably going to get into a whole thing about Floyd and his big move over and what that means for Broner, because I think Broner is going to get solidified at HBO, and it's going to be the next kind of Floyd brand, I think. That's what I've been told. They haven't announced it yet. But it's going to be interesting to see how both these guys kind of influence the industry, but also to see the future of Adrian. Because it's interesting, people compare them, but Dave and I have always said this, he fights more like old Floyd than young Floyd. He's a little more aggressive than old Floyd.
Right.
But the pace and all that stuff that he does is very much older Floyd. And yeah, he gets hit a little bit. I wouldn't consider him a defensive genius, Broner. It's going to be interesting. I'm not sure where everything is going. This could be the year of the upset, if you really think about it. Guerrero has a very good chance. I think Austin Trout's going to win, and people would consider that an upset. I wouldn't. Provodnikov has a shot. There's a few other little ones here and there. That Alan Martinez fight, that has a little upset special about it that's coming up. This could be a fun year. 2013, that 13 might actually be bad luck for a lot of folks. So I'm kind of excited about this year. I don't know about you guys, other than this first part, which is just garbage because everybody's getting canceled.
Hey, Cloud is going to be on the show in a few. I understand I'm going to be listening
right.
in. He's probably listening in right now. I love Cloud, but, you know, and this might shock you, Dave, because, you know, I really am not a fan. I think Hopkins
right.
is going to stop him. I think Hopkins
is going
to stop him.
You know what? Gibb was making that same pick, man. He was doing
what's
the
that?
Same about Hopkins, you know, stopping
Cloud.
That's
Cloud.
That's a tough fight. It's a tough fight. You never know what Hopkins is going to show up.
To me, I was watching the Glenn Johnson match earlier today, and every right hand I saw, I just kept thinking to myself, no matter what, Hopkins could be 60 years old, the right hands that are landing in this fight, Hopkins can land a lot flusher and with a lot more power than what Glenn Johnson's hitting him with. And there's going to be stuff coming behind it, too. There's going to be a lot of dirty moves coming behind it, a lot of frustrating clinches. Every time I've seen Cloud get in these fights with guys that are just, you know, boxing and being disciplined, at some point the guy falls apart. He just, you know, he's young or he's not really an A-type fighter, not even a B-plus, and the guy would just fall apart like that Campillo fight, you know. Where the dude just got lazy and got clipped. And, you know, even though Cloud probably should have lost that fight, but I don't think Hopkins is going to fade like that. And I just think even if Hopkins started to fade, I don't think it's going to get to that point, because I think the damage Hopkins will dish out will be enough to keep Cloud from taking advantage later in the fight.
It's interesting. I like Cloud. I always kind of, early on, before those fights came in, I think it was heading towards more of the Clinton Woods or after Clinton Woods, but before Glenn, I thought, you know, this is a style that could overwhelm Bernard Hopkins. He throws a lot of punches. He's very aggressive. He seems to have a good chin. But inactivity has absolutely killed this guy. I mean, he fought twice in 2008. I think 2007 was the last year that he was really active. He had four fights, but they were all short. They all ended, I think the longest went five rounds. Then the next year he takes on Mike Wood, one round, fights one more time, that's like a 10-rounder. And then the next year was actually pretty good. Well, 2009, he only fought once. He fought Clinton Woods, and that was it. And then twice in 2010, once in 2011, once in 2012. That's the problem right there. You know what I mean? That's the problem. No activity.
Hey, I got to say this really quick to this dude, Sal, Mr. Boxing Guru, who I've met you. Okay? Just really quick, dude. Sucks, really sucks. He put sucks really first. It's supposed to be really sucks that people like Leaving the Ring have to make themselves feel good by bashing others. I stopped listening immediately after. Excuse me, brother. Don't you call yourself the Twitter bullies or something like that? That means you talk smack about everybody else, but if somebody says anything about you guys become very sensitive. You guys just have this hashtag. That's what cracks me up. And I was just telling a friend of mine just the other day. I said, you know, I don't know if you remember this. You know, if you're a popular kid, the only way nerds and goofballs can make fun of you is by writing in their yearbook. Has Twitter become that? You can only talk about...
Yes, it has. It absolutely has. You know, everybody does this hashtag, these passive-aggressive so subtweet Thursday.
Right.
So, and hashtag bullies. All these guys do. I've actually blocked that guy.
Right.
I blocked his little buddy because they're just shit stirrers, and I'm kind of tired of them, you know?
The thing that makes me upset is that why I you know what, Gabriel? You've done your thing, you know, and I've told people this. Don't put me in that same category. Don't say that Dave Duenas or Leaving the Ring has said anything. I didn't say anything. I don't put nobody's names out. I didn't say anything. All I've said is that I've helped out a lot of folks, and they've took shots at me. And I haven't sunk to that level to do the same thing. You know,
that just sound like you were just listening to hate.
Mr. Boxing Guru, let me remind you, I named your buddy's show. I named your buddy's show. So if you want to talk about people talking behind their backs, you might want to talk about you might want to ask your buddy what they've said about me.
Talk to the mayor of Moronville about stabbing people in the back, and he knows exactly who I'm talking about. That dude is not the friendly face that he puts on. I love everybody, and I'm, my family, my best friend. He's a liar. He's a two-faced liar. That's his bottom line. That's all I'll really say about it. He knows what's up. He'll never come up to my face to say, hey, you're wrong, because you know what? I'm not. We saw each other in person recently. One of us could stand up tall and straight and smile and look him in the eye. The other dude was, like, looking at the floor, and he knows exactly who he is. He knows exactly why. He is not the friendly guy that he tries to pretend like he is. He's trying to become an advisor now and get on the other side of the thing. He is not a friendly person. He's a two-faced liar. I cannot emphasize that enough. So don't come at me with this, you're the negative guy. Look at the body of my work. The body of my work speaks for itself. In about a week, you'll see an interview with me on one of the top sports sites, the top sports site in the world. And they didn't call me for any other reason, because then they liked my work and they're checking it out and I could offer something. Those guys, they offer negativity. They kind of dumb down the conversation. They've interrupted, you know, a conversation that we're having that's a good one. And I think, Dave, I think you're right to bring it up. It really is enough. Are we in this sport together, or are we going to backbite each other and fight over Blog Talk radio shows? I mean,
yeah, this is ridiculous. You know, like I've put people on platforms. I've paid for it. You know, and you're gonna take shots at me, really? And then you're gonna have your little groupies come at me? You know, Rob, you've known me for how many years? How many years, brother? And have I ever done you wrong? I've never done anybody wrong. You know, I've never stepped on anybody's feet to try to get anything that I've worked hard for. You know, I've busted my ass. And that's the thing that just amazes me with some of you folks out there, that, you know, I've had other radio shows try to pick up the, you know, try to swoop up my writers. You know, I've had other radio shows that have been with me, but they were conspiring of doing their own thing behind my back. And then I don't say nothing. And for some reason, they will take a shot at me. You know, it is what it is. But please, don't sit here and tell me that I'm saying something bad about somebody. I mean, you know.
Dave, here's the thing. And Ryan Bivens just hit me and said, you know, we're kind of lost a little bit because you guys are vaguely talking about who you're talking about. And I guess if I'm going to call them passive aggressive, then I guess I should just be straight up and honest with our readers. That's what we've always been. We've never been afraid to tell the truth. I'm just going to say it, okay? I hope that's okay with you. This guy, Ernie Gabillon, who works at the Boxing Lab, a show that was created by Dave, was given the name by Dave, was paid for by Dave for quite a long time.
Okay, but hold on. Before you even say anything, look, listen. I'm going to say this right now.
I'm just going to be real specific
I'm not
who we're talking about.
Right.
That's
who you're talking about. But I'm talking about the overall. You know, like me and
well,
Ernie haven't talked yet.
Yeah.
I definitely want to talk to Ernie, you know, because these are all whatever it is and stuff. And, you know,
but let me just
I'll give him that.
I've caught him in several, because you haven't had a chance to speak, so I'll speak for myself, what I'm speaking of, and then we'll just move on to boxing stuff. I just keep getting people telling me, this guy's talking about you. This guy tells me not to go on your show. This guy tells me
right.
that you're going to do this. Don't interview with him. I can name three people. I won't because I keep confidence, and I actually, you know, my word actually means something, unlike Ernie Gabillon's. That's what makes me a little angry. So when I get these shots, it's kind of just come to a head. It's been going on for quite a while. Between Ernie and I, he's been lying to me for years, and I just kind of found this out late last year. So that's what this kind of is. It's a little bit of the dam breaking. It's not about rivalry. I don't consider them my quote-unquote competition because they can't hold my jock when it comes to reporting or really doing the show. And that's just a fact. That's not really bragging because Ernie's been on the show, and the show got better when he left. It's kind of getting to a point where it's really annoying. And you know, you can take shots and say, our show isn't good or we're boring or you don't like my work, this and that. But when you start trashing me in the industry, smiling at my face, shaking my hand, but trashing me to industry people that I deal with on a daily basis, then we got problems. Then I'm going to call you a liar and what everybody's listening. So there you go.
Exactly.
And let's move to boxing.
It's funny, you know, I crack up with the little groupie guys and stuff, you know. You're 40 plus, man. And you want to talk beef with me on Twitter and stuff, when you've seen me, it's all good. I understand that, you know, like I said, you know, cowards need a forum. Anyways, hey, Rob, hey, brother, thanks for calling in, man. I really, really appreciate it. It's always fun, man, and, you know, I miss your work and stuff. Like I said, one of the originators, okay. One of the original dudes out there that was doing your thing, and it's greatly missed.
All right, man. I'll catch you guys. Keep listening, though.
All right, brother. Thanks, man. Again, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can. Here on Leaving Ring, speak myself, Dave Duenas, and Gibran Montoya. And I apologize. You know, I don't get ticked off as easily and stuff, but, you know, it's just, like I said, you know, my name keeps being brought up into something that I really don't want to be a part of. You know, I try to be a very positive person.
You are. You're not.
I can. To help out a lot of folks and stuff. And you know what? People that know me personally, and if I do shoot out venom, it's going to be in your face. You know, and I'm a very understanding person too. I understand we all have to fall into the swallow of darkness. I get it. But, man, stop having your buddies fight for your fights and stuff. You know, if you got something to say to me and I did something wrong, yo, come and tell me. Don't have your little
and seriously, Dave.
Tell me something. That's
whatever
just wrong.
Whatever you shouldn't do, don't text me an apology and tell me that you feel bad about how you treated me, but now you wanna treat everybody else really nice to make up for that. No.
You know, I've owed up where I have a beef with somebody, I've hit them up. I've had beef with the Concrete Jungle, who I called the Soft Creek Jungle, because those guys, you know, they did me wrong, and I called them out. I never brought up any other beef I've had with other folks behind the scenes because I just didn't feel that was what people were tuning in to listen to.
Yeah, you know, we want to talk boxing, but I think I feel better. I don't know about you, clearing the air. But we do have John Chargan on the line.
Yeah, I don't. I really don't, man. I just don't think that, you know. I know a lot of people are saying, they're like texting me, this is a very interesting conversation. It needed to be done. You know what? Maybe so. It's just not. It's not what my agenda is and stuff. I try to keep it strictly boxing. But when I have somebody just putting my name into something, and like I said, you know, me and Gabriel are completely two different people. And that's the way it is. You know, two different personalities and stuff. I'm more of a private person. I like to keep it in private. But when you keep bashing me or you keep trying to say that I'm saying something, dude, you don't even know me. First off, and this Jay Morales, whatever, dude, I've called you out, homie. I even said, you don't even want to put your face on Twitter. You know what I mean? I'll gladly like to sit down with you. I will probably snatch you by your neck, but, hey, I will gladly sit down with you. You know, you can talk all the smack you want, little man, but you ain't fearing me. I fear nobody. You know, like I said, I've helped out people. I've helped out a lot of folks, and I just don't get it.
Well, I'm kind of just tired of.
Anyways,
I'm tired of Ernie lying to the boxing community about who he really is. That's actually just a straight up truth. I'm tired of Ernie Gabillone lying to the boxing community about who he really is. He is a two-faced person. The smiling guy that you see is not who he really is. At least that's my personal experience. But let's move on with our next guest.
Let's move on with our next guest. And I'm going to pass in some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Like I said, I apologize. Let's go with the longest person that's been on hold for us here. Area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? CT. How you guys doing tonight?
CT, what's up, brother? How you doing, man? I got to remember your number by heart, man.
All right. I want to talk about a couple things, if I could. Just the Bronner fight and then the upcoming fight tomorrow between Holt and Peterson, which I think is a very good fight. I think with Bronner, I think he's very talented, but I'm not going to jump on a bandwagon that quickly. I think he's getting by with size alone. If he stays that lightweight, I think he has to be. He has the potential of being one of the best lightweights since Shane Mosley, probably knocking everybody out like that. But to me, I think the guy who gives him a little bit of trouble might be surprising, but over his, you know, his grit and his will alone, I think Beltran gives him a little bit of trouble. Not say he beats Broner, but stylistically, I think Beltran has the will and, you know, that never give up type attitude. And I can see him fighting Broner pretty well. But Broner is definitely talented. I think his power is real. He definitely has very hard punching power, and I agree with you guys. He fights more like the old Floyd. Definitely not good with his feet movement as well as Floyd was. Not very good reflexes, you know, as far as hand and foot coordination together like Floyd used to be. But I think his power is real, but I think once he goes up to his natural weight and as far as 140, and maybe above that, he's going to have a lot of trouble. I think his shoulder roll is pretty good. I think his hand speed and power is pretty well, but I think those guys match him up pretty well with size and power as well. But who knows what is in store for him in the time being. As far as the Kendall Holt and Peterson fight, I'm looking forward to this fight. I'm a fan of both fighters. I think they both came up tough careers. I want to see how Peterson does since the layoff.
Yeah, me too. Big time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stylistically, I've been looking at this fight over and over. I first picked Peterson, but, you know, now that I think about it, I think Holt knows with, you know, Peterson having this rust might have, you know, in this fight. And him coming forward, I think Holt's going to hit him with something, you know, that left hook. I think Peterson's going to run into it. Yeah, I'm picking Holt by stoppage.
You know, Holt's got power of both hands. And CT, I'm going to put you on hold because we have our next guest, but I'm going to patch you back in so we can talk about this. But Holt, I agree with you. You know, Holt's got some big power and stuff. The only thing with Peterson is, though, is he has that brother that's got big power, and he's sparred with him for quite some time. So it's not something that he's going to be – there's no surprise when it comes to something like that. Let me find out, make sure that we have our next guest with us. Mr. Don Targan, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
How you doing, sir? Thanks for holding on for a little bit. Stephanie just texted right now. I just saw her text that you were on, so I hope it wasn't too long.
No, that's fine.
So the reason why we wanted to talk to you is one thing is that you're a Hall of Famer. You're a man that's been in this business for a long, long time. So what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about was – contracts. And what I wanted to ask you is, what do you think about how things are being dealt with? You know, from we're talking, you know, back when you started, contracts or a gentleman's handshake. And I've always believed in a gentleman's handshake. I think that's one something that's been dismissed throughout the years is that, you know, when I shake a man's hand, the agreement is solid. It meant something. Where nowadays, it doesn't mean nothing. It's diddly. It's just gone. It's dead. We see fighters now make a contract to a gentleman's contract, and then it falls apart. My prime example is Gamboa, okay, signing on to fight Brandon Rios, and then all of a sudden another promoter or advisor swoops in, takes control of that contract, and we don't see that fight. Why do you think this is happening a lot more in boxing?
Well, no, I'll tell you. It, you know, maybe it just wasn't publicized, but that has always been a problem. You know, you get, you know, back in the days when I was at the Olympic Auditorium, the great Eileen Eaton ran the Olympic Auditorium. She was the promoter, mm-hmm. and I was her matchmaker for 20 years. And she had a rule, no promotional contracts. She used to tell me that you're, besides me, you're boss of the fans. And if we sign promotional contracts, we got to give them easy fights. Then we're cheating the fans. And that's why she operated so successfully. But we lost many a good fighter because we didn't have him signed.
Why do you think loyalty? Why do you think loyalty has really kind of gone away, or did it really ever exist? Are we romanticizing the past?
Yeah, somewhat. But you're right in one thing. It is worse now than it was. I mean, look at, here's what happened. You get a fighter, and he's, say, getting pretty good money. And then somebody wants that fighter, and he comes up to him, and it could be like dripping water very slowly. The first thing you ask him is that all you got the other night for that fight? And that registers, and then they keep it up and keep it up till the fighter becomes so dissatisfied and nothing that the manager, the one that has them under contract, can do to appease them, that finally it comes to the... But if you have a good, legitimate, legal contract, you can hold on to it and get paid for your time and effort and the money that you put in. But like Gamboa is notorious for that. He, in his short career he's had, I think he's been with 3 or 4 different people already.
In terms of building fighters, this is something I was very curious about. We were just talking about Tavoris Cloud, and the guy's fought a handful of times in the last, like, few years. And I think it's really
right.
been to his detriment, for managerial issues and things like that. Fighters don't fight as often, and Steve Kim was saying this. They fight less, they get injured more. Do you see a correlation of that and more like a dilution of the talent or the skill because they fight less?
Well, listen, man, if a fighter that keeps busy, you'll find that they perform better. I mean, you get exceptions, like we were all talking the last few days because of what has happened with Mayweather. I mean, it's amazing that he can take these, like, year off and that and go in and be sharp. And although I think Floyd in the Cotto fight, I think he got hit more in that fight than I've seen him in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, he
but
did.
He
looked
he takes those layoffs. But there's a guy that you're never going to catch really out of shape, because while he might act up in that at times, one thing he does not do is dissipate or let himself get out of shape.
Do you think, though, the development of the younger fighters? I mean, usually they're fighting, you know, 4 or 5 times a year at least. Is that something that we've just missed as we've lost?
Yeah, I'll give you one who I think is probably one of the most outstanding young fighters that I've seen in a long time, and his name is Leo Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And he fought probably 5 times this past year.
Yeah, it was 5-5.
And he is improving. He's probably the best body puncher I've seen since
Right. Yeah.
a young Ruben Oliveras in the 70s.
Yeah, he's...
There's a guy that really keeps busy. In fact,
I think it shows.
Absolutely. I mean, his output, the amount of punches he throws, and that this kid is going to be a great fighter.
Don, what do you think about Floyd Mayweather's move? Leaving HBO, who he's been with from the beginning of his career, jumping with Showtime. What do you think about that?
Well, I think probably what Floyd thought about, I mean, he's 36, what, this week or next week? And,
Right. You
know, it's a tough business, and I understand the loyalty in that, but he's, HBO has been good for him, but he's been good for HBO. And I think Showtime just stacked it up so high that it was something he couldn't turn down.
Robert the Ghost Guerrero, which was the logical choice for Floyd Mayweather to take on, and immediately the fans are not so receptive. They're believing that Floyd's going to walk through them. What is your thoughts about the Bay Area fighter, Robert the Ghost Guerrero? Does he have a chance? Is he a major threat, or is this just one of those?
Yes, he is. I mean, does he figure? No, he doesn't. But is it an out fight where he has absolutely no chance? No. Robert is a talented, talented kid and very, very determined. So he's going to go out there and he's really going to try. And like I'm saying, we're saying Floyd does okay with the layoffs, but by the time that fight, it's over a year since he fought last.
Right. No, I agree. I think, if any time, when we all talk about timing in boxing, this is the perfect timing for Robert the Guerrero to get Floyd Mayweather. Would
perfect.
You agree?
That's a very good observation, because if there ever was a time, this is the time for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gabriel?
I'm just curious, where do you see things going? I mean, with this platform, you came up during boxing's heyday. You've kind of seen it all. You've seen our rise and our fall in the modern era. Do you think that this deal with Floyd, which promises maybe more CBS dates and everything that Golden Boy is doing, do you think this can move us quickly, or is it going to be kind of an incremental thing that we teach this next generation
about
boxing?
I'll tell you, one reason I'm a little excited about it is when we had boxing just really going good, we had network television. I mean, HBO and Showtime, this is fine, but the amount of people it reaches to just, you know, regular network television. And from what I understand is that CBS is really going to get in with both feet, and that the things like HBO does, the 24/7 and that, just imagine what that can do for boxing if you put that on free TV at home where you don't have to subscribe to be watching it. And I think those are the plans. If that's the case, it can only help boxing.
Well, there you go.
I 100% agree with that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All the little platforms, I keep muting myself and then talking to you, Don, and then I realize you can't hear me at all. No, I think, you know, as much flack as I've given Golden Boy about the PED thing and all that, what they're trying to do is very interesting to me. And I find them to be a company that is on the edge in terms of technology, social media. They're right there with it, live streaming. And the fact that they've moved us to CBS, and they really made a good pick in Leo Santa Cruz, putting him on TV. That's the guy that I would – he's guaranteed action every time out. I'm very excited about what they're doing and how much they're bringing.
I think
us.
So. If they can carry it through, they have a lot of ideas. It's a, you know, very progressive there. I mean, I'm a little, you know, I've been a consultant at Golden Boy since they were formed in 2001, I think it was. And, you know, I like the way we do things. We don't always agree on matches and that. And, you know, some things where we have different philosophies, but I'm one that does not believe that the way to develop a fighter is to get him easy wins. I think for a fighter to really develop and to create a following, he has to keep winning, but he's got to be in good fights. Whether they last four, five, six, seven rounds, they got to be in. But going out and getting hit on the shoulder and that, and going out, it takes forever to build a fighter.
I agree. Different experiences, different looks. I mean, watching Freddie, I've watched him spar his guys for a long time, and he'll always mix it up and have guys look at different looks and it's not necessarily about the guy that he's fighting. It's about kind of giving him different experiences, different angles, different approaches. And I think that
there's another thing, my pet peeve. You just brought it up. Freddie Roach was as good a trainer 10, 12 years ago as he is now. But when you get a good fighter, I mean, look at now, Amir Khan has left him. Was it Freddie's fault that Amir Khan got in the way of a left hook? You know, what can a trainer do? But
right.
I go way, way back with Freddie. Freddie fought a main event for me against Macho Camacho. That was, my God, that's been years ago. And he also fought Bobby Chacon for me. And, you know, those were big fights in that day.
Well, but, I think... What's that?
No, excuse me.
Okay. Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so these, you know, you get some managers, this doesn't apply in Freddie's case, but if you get some managers, if their fighter loses, the first one to fire is the trainer.
Always.
A trainer is a thankless, thankless job.
I think it's the toughest gig in boxing in a lot of ways.
Oh, it is. If the fighter wins, you're good. The fighter loses. It's not the fighter's fault. It's not the manager for the opponent he picks. It's the trainer's fault.
Always. You know, and you're either a genius or you're an idiot. And I find that funny with Freddie particularly, that as soon as Manny Pacquiao hits the canvas, they've won countless belts together, untold riches.
Yeah.
And everybody goes, I knew Freddie was overrated all along.
Overrated, you know? That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the flavor of the month now. Pretty soon, poor Virgil up there is not going to have room because of Andre Ward's success. See, that's the way it goes. Every fighter wants to go with him.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, it's... Yeah, guy wins Fighter Trainer of the Year, and boom. And, you know, Robert Garcia has been experiencing the same thing. He gets success.
That's right. You know,
yeah.
It goes in cycles.
Well, I'm really curious, too. We've talked briefly about this before, and I think it's coming to a head more and more and more. The PED testing in the sport. Do you think at some point the commissions just need to get together, the ABC, and say, "All right, you know, this is just happening too much. We need to talk about it and upgrade or do something."
Yeah, that's right. It's got to, other sports are trying to do it. We have to. Oh, it's
right.
Going to come because it has to. It has to. But they've got to. It's got to be a uniform thing where they're. You know, there's no outs in that where you can go and if this substance is banned, there's no I can't or he's been carrying it around too long or any of those things that they use to beat the test. Do it, have them strong because, listen, if they're going to cheat, then there's no place for them.
I agree. I agree 100%. I think it's just about time. I mean, it's been such an unregulated Wild West sport for so long. And people always say, well, that's just boxing. I don't think that's good enough anymore. I really don't. But I appreciate learning from you, Don. I love when you come on the show and tell us about the old days. But you give us a perspective on modern times that,
exactly. Yep.
That we often miss out on. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm still putting on shows. We've got a show in Redwood City outside of San Francisco on March 8th with nothing but local kids. Every kid is within 30 or 40 miles from there, and it's a small venue, like 1,600 seats and that, but I think 4 or 5 days before the show will be sold out. That's what I get a kick out of now doing.
Is doing the local shows with the local guys?
Oh, yeah. That's
well, that last time we saw you was at the Solo Book Sale, and you had this big smile, you know, and you even said that, like, this is what you, this is where it's at. This is what you wanted to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've been there, done that, and I think you've settled of where makes you smile the most.
What are you
doing
back
right.
to Memorial?
My 20 years at the Olympic Auditorium, it was known as the Madison Square Garden of the West, and it was great. We were on weekly television, but in Eileen Eaton, she knew how to make television work for her, and it was just great. We developed so many champions in that, and they never had to leave Los Angeles.
Did you, because you did so much in L.A. boxing, and Steve Kim wrote a nice piece about the late Dr. Jerry Buss and what he meant
right.
to forum boxing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
We were competitors for a lot of those years, forum boxing and Olympic boxing. But they did an excellent job over there, and we did also. We'd had a little head start, but they caught up, and they put on some good shows, and Jerry Buss loved boxing. He was there every show. In fact, he even came over to our shows at the Olympics several times.
Now, are you bringing back the Memorial? That was the thing I've really been wanting to ask you, because I'd like to come back to Sacramento and see a show there sometime soon.
Yeah,
we
did one show, but then they put in a new floor, so we'll be able to go another couple of months. They'll be ready. But it was sure nice to, because I put on shows there in the 50s in the Memorial, you know, starting in the 50s. And we had a show several months back there at the Memorial, and it was just great.
Yeah, I think next to the Home Depot Center, that's my favorite kind of local venue up in Sacramento, and then down here, obviously, the Home Depot Center.
Well, you know, the Memorial Odd, the Stockton Odd, and the San Jose Civic, all three of those were built when they had the WPA during the Roosevelt administration.
Wow.
Those were all built, and they were all very similar. And I promoted in all those places.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So much history there. You know, that's. I think what fight fans need to do more is see those local shows. You know, that's really,
yeah.
I think, the lifeblood of this sport. You know,
that's why the Olympic Auditorium, we had 10,400 seats. And it was just great. You could do it. It was built for the 32 Olympics, and it was built for boxing and wrestling, period. That was it. So every seat was just great.
Yeah, that's the thing I love about it. $20 and you get that little balcony seat or in the Home
Depot.
Yeah,
the balcony would hang like almost over the ring. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it's like a NorCal, blue horizon. Yep.
Yeah, and they had from the dressing room to the ring, they had like an underground tunnel where the fighters back in the dressing room would come, walk under the crowd and come right up at ringside, right up the apron. It was beautiful.
Well, Don, thanks very much again for calling in and talking to us here on Leave the Ring, man. I appreciate
me.
It. Absolutely.
Okay.
We would love to have you again, as always, man. Thank you again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Don.
Don Targan and stuff. Man, I love having him on. I mean, we're talking about education and stuff. He brings in stuff. I'm going to bring in my next guest really quick because we have a lot of other folks jumping on that are going to be talking boxing here with us, and we got a lot of calls here today. I believe we have Michael Medina. Michael, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here, man. How you doing?
Good, man. Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us. I know we had you on for on hold for quite some time. We had you scheduled for a certain time. But, hey, whenever chance we can get you to come on and talk boxing with us, hey, it's a pleasure.
Awesome, man. It's a pleasure for me to be here, too, man. Thank you.
So you're going to be on March 1st, ESPN, Willie Nelson, 50 Cent's very first real promotional. I mean, because everything else he's done, he's, you know, it was basically he was putting his fighter on. But hands-on, he's doing this himself with Lou DiBella. Obviously, you're not with 50 Cent, but what does this mean for yourself? And to be on this card against Willie Nelson, you know, and at first I've seen you fight numerous times. I like the way you fight, especially when I found out even more that, you know, the whole Modesto thing. I'm not from Modesto. I live in Modesto now. I'm originally from San Jose, but I got to support the folks that come out of here. So give me your thoughts, and what do you think it means to you right now being on ESPN to show what you bring to the table?
Well, basically what it means to me right now, it's kind of like all for nothing in my career. You know, this is the opportunity for me to showcase my skills and everything that I've learned since I moved here to L.A. and started the Sweet Science learning experience with my new coach, Eric Brown. I have my team, Steven Fader, who's a great manager who's been putting in fights. I also work with Lou DiBella, you know, and as you said, 50 Cent is just making history in boxing right now. He's a very famous rapper. I used to love to run at his music when I was beginning my career. And it's kind of a pleasure to be able to fight in one of his cards and also fight against a fighter that that has a great name as Willie Nelson and has a great style that I think matches with mine because he's a forward fighter. We're both going to go there and try to win this fight. And I think it's an exciting fight for both of us and also for the boxing fans.
How is it that you got into boxing in the first place? So what brought you to sport?
Well, it was destiny, man, because honestly, I wasn't very into boxing throughout my whole teenage. I was more into basketball. But when I was 17 years old, I moved with my father to help him with a restaurant that he wanted to open in Monterrey, Mexico. And one day, this guy came in, and he was really hungry, and he asked me for money, but I didn't give him money. I had told him that if he wanted some food, so I gave him a meal, and then after the meal, he told me these crazy stories. He was like a veteran of the army from Mexico. He had like some crazy stories. We talked for like an hour. After he finished eating, he stands up and he tells me, you know what, I have money, but I have these tickets for the boss. We like to go there and just check it out. And I was like, of course. He gives me the tickets. I told my dad when he was back, we paid for the store, and then we went to the Arena Coliseum on Monterrey. And I don't know, it was just like as long when I went in there, I just felt the vibe of boxing. I saw these kids in my weight class fighting at the time, and I thought to myself that I could beat them. And my dad, because he boxed when he was younger, he just he told me, like, well, you think you can beat them, you should go train. I'll take you to the gym tomorrow. And I was like, okay, sure. And it started like a joke, you know, kind of like, okay, I'll do it. First day I go in there, I spar, and I got hooked immediately, you know, like just the energy, the boxing, the technique. It was just I felt that I really found something that I felt comfortable with, and I just took a decision, finished my career. I was studying engineering in Mexico in University of Oklahoma, Nuevo León, and I got a call to come and spar Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. here in the wild card. So basically, I was like, okay, let's take this opportunity, man. How many times am I gonna have the opportunity to go fight a guy who's famous, you know? So I came to LA and I started. I watched all these champions and like Freddie Roach, all these Manny Pacquiao. You know, I was kind of like starstruck. I was in the place. I was like in Rome when the Roman players were the best. And I just decided if I want to be a boxer, I have to stay here. And that's what I did, man. It was just a choice in one day, and it turned out to be good. You know,
that is destiny. That's just straight up. You know, you were just kind of meant to do that. That's what a crazy story. But what about it kind of kept you in? I mean, did you immediately kind of just take to it and like, you know, this is what I need to do, and you just took off as an amateur? Can you talk about that part of your journey as amateur and then heading into pro?
Yeah, well, when I was in Mexico, I started training at Club El Deportivo El Jefe, which was like the biggest boxing club there.
Right.
And I started with Rosalía Avilés, who was the promoter of that place. And he saw me boxing amateur. And, you know, amateur in Mexico, in my weight class, is not as competitive as here in America. So I had a year, around four fights, and I got a record of 12 wins, no losses, and one DQ. And the DQ was because we kept swinging after the bell rang, and it disqualified both of us. But after that, I was going to go. And my trainer at the time mixed up my paperwork, and I couldn't get in that year. So I was really frustrated, and I told them, you know what? Bullshit with waiting another year. I'm going to go pro. So they try to make me stay amateur and learn a little bit more, but I was a little bit kind of like anxious to already get into the ring. And I went pro when I was 18 years old.
Why is that in Mexico that a lot of guys turn pro so young? Like you were saying, it's not as lucrative. Is it just not as backed as it should be? I mean, is everything kind of just geared towards turning pro?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in Mexico, it's there's not a big amateur boom, you know? Like, it's more about the professionals. Everyone who starts boxing, basically, you go and you learn by getting hit and by learning in the process. And once you see all the professionals and you're sparring, I was sparring professionals since I was amateur, since I had, like, no fights. So I always felt that I was able to fight professional, and I was doing this for no money and just basically for the love of the sport. And when I saw that I wanted to go professional, it was just like a choice. It was just like, you know what? I think I can do it. And unfortunately, my first fight, I fought a guy who was a southpaw. I never had fought a southpaw. And he was like over 50 fights. And we had like a tough fight. And we both ended up with both eyes closed. The people were loving the fight because it was like a straight-up scrap. We're just like landing shots on each other's face for the whole fight, and that was it. You know, like it was a draw, my first professional fight, and after that, I started getting a little bit more into it. I was like, okay, professional, it's not the same. You know, like it's no headgear, the punches hurt way more, and you have to move your head, you have to use more techniques, kind of like measure your shots and your energy. It was like it was a whole transition.
You know, you've fallen short, and you have shown like you've got a lot of heart. What do you think you got to turn around for yourself? I mean, because the promise is there. I mean, you know, the last time I was visibly able, had a chance to watch you fight, you put everything behind it, and you didn't get the win. It didn't happen for you. With Willie Nelson here, what do you think that from the past of what you've done, you've had to improve and make sure that you don't repeat it again?
Well, the main thing that I'm working on right now is my defense, because I think that's a deficiency that I've been having in other fights, you know? Like, I have a great chin. I will not go down, and I have never gone down, you know?
Right.
The only loss I had by TKO, it was kind of a bullshit call in the hometown of my opponent, Saul Roman. I have a great chin, but I don't like to get hit. You know, no one does. Working with Eric Brown is also helping me to learn that in a way, you know? Like, boxing is a sweet science. It's basically the ability to hit and not get punched as much as you can. So I've been working on that, and sparring has been working good. I'm also working on my natural style is being aggressive, going forward, throwing shots, and showing a lot of heart, you know. But at the same time, I think it's a mixture of both of worlds, you know, like that Mexican blood that I have that is going to make me throw a lot of shots, and also the new style of American boxing, which is more technical. It's more, in a way, it's a smarter way of fighting. It's a whole science. Honestly, that's the difference. Like, in Mexico, there's great fighters, you know. You can see Terrible Morales. You can see Juan Manuel Marquez. You can see Salvador Sanchez, fighters who have, like, this natural ability to fight. And even though they have great trainers, like, you can tell this within them that they've learned and they've modeled their style. And in America, it's a little bit more, they show you all the basics, the boxing 101s, like, perfectly for an amateur. And you have, like, long amateur careers, 100 fights. I think Willie Nelson is over 100 amateur fights. So they have very practiced how to throw a jab, how to move away from danger, how to do this, how to do that. And in Mexico, you learn more about, like, you get punched and you don't want to get punched again. Well, you move your head or you put your hand up. And basically, that's how it is. So now that I have both worlds, I think that I've been able to merge them pretty good. And I feel great. I feel in the best stage of my career. I'm 26 years old. I've won my last two fights, and I have great trainer. I have a great team. My mentality is there. I have everything I need. You know, I have my... I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm a new father. I just have a new baby, and that adds a motivation as well. You know, I want to provide for her, for my family. And I mean, I think I have everything to beat him. And I think no disrespect for him, but this is my fight, and this is my championship, and I'm going to Connecticut with that mentality.
Right. Well, man, you know what? Like I said, I've been following you, and I want to wish you the best. I think you can pull it off, you know. I'm hoping you're going to pull it off and stuff. And this is a really big stage for yourself. Willie Nelson, what is it about the importance of what do you think that he brings to the table that is the main concern for yourself that you got to watch out and you have to keep your eye on and that you had to work on to make sure he can't capitalize?
Okay, well, basically, in what I could see from his last fight, I think that he does bring a good level of experience. You know, he's able to
right.
keep his hands. He has a superb conditioning. You know, he will be able to go the 10 rounds with no problem, the same as I will be. And I just think that it's going to be a process. You know, it depends what he's working on, because I see a lot of defects on his style as well. I'm going to work on those. Like, he doesn't throw the jab as much, you know? And even if he does, I've been working on dodging the jab from a tall fighter like him to get in the short range. If he gets in the short range and he tries to crowd my punches, I've been working on how to get away from that and land in my hard shots. So I think that I'm not very concerned of what he can bring to the table. I'm more concerned about what I've been doing with the training camp, and I feel comfortable with it. And it's just going to show up in the fight. Eventually, we can all talk, and I know that he's very confident and he's talking like he's going to win. But what matters is what we do up in the ring. And this March 1st, we're both going to show the best of ourselves and let the best win. You know, we're all going to leave it in the ring.
There you go, man. Yeah, absolutely going to leave it in the ring. Hey, brother, thanks again for calling in and talking to us here. Michael Medina, what else can we say, man? Thanks again.
Yeah, great stuff. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure to be here, man. And just check out the fight, everyone who's listening. I know that this is a great show. I like it, and I know that a lot of people are listening to this. So pay attention. This is going to be a great fight. Me and Will and us are going to go at it, and it's going to be a good championship fight for the NABF. I'm getting my title back.
There we go. All right, brother. We wish you all the luck in the world. We'll talk to you very soon.
All right, bro. Bye bye.
Michael Medina is going to be fighting Willie Nelson on ESPN March 1st on the Lou DiBella and 50 Cent SMS promotional group. So to make sure you tune in and check that out. Medina, man, I mean, if you haven't watched him, I mean, you've had to. He was on the pay-per-view. He's been on a pay-per-view card. I believe it was the Manny Pacquiao one. I can't remember off the top of my head and stuff. Really strong kid. Is there some promise there between him, you know? And really quick, man, again, I'm having these little guys over here keep continuously talking smack on Twitter, saying I'm saying something. I didn't say anything. You know, And the funny thing is, you know, you're calling yourself the hashtag bullies and Twitter bullies, whatever it is, and putting down my partner here, Mr. Sensitive, but you guys are being a little sensitive yourself.
Oh, I'm not sensitive at all. I think that these guys are the biggest cowards on the planet. I mean, these guys will take shots at you on Twitter, but when you see them in person, oh, it's all smiles. And their little leader, the mayor of Moronville, Ernie Gabbione, that guy is such a brave guy. He can't look me in the eye after, what, 7-8 years of friendship and stabbing me in the back for most of that? You can't actually come to me and be apologized? No, you had to do it on text like a teenage girl. Nah, sorry. I'm the same guy everywhere I go. Anybody that knows me can attest to that. I'm a really nice guy. I'm
right.
Actually very, very friendly. However, when you piss me off, you got problems. Ask Mark Ortega how I deal with my problems. I slapped him in open public. I didn't care. And I challenged him to a fight. He's a coward. He backed out of it. That's how I handle problems. Generally, intelligently, but if you want to go animal, we can get animal. I have no problem going to war. So, you know, Ernie Gabbione, you got something to say to me? Be a man. Don't text me. Be a man. For once in your life, be a man. Don't stab people in the back. Don't go tell people not to interview with me. Don't tell me one thing and then be going doing the fighter another way about me, like you know you've done on many occasions. Don't do that. Be an adult and tell the little people or the Lillipop Guild or wherever these guys are, get back out of my face.
Yeah, that's the thing that amazes me is that, you know, like I said, I didn't say anything. But you want, you know, you want to have them attack me. That's all good, you know. And try to make it like it's the victim. Dude, I'm not the bad guy, okay? I think I've proven that behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
Not the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've talked out a lot of folks. And what your buddies don't know, hey, maybe you should inform them. Because like I said, I didn't say anything, but...
Well,
you want to say something to me?
Exactly. Bring it. I mean, you know, for me, I just block and move on. I try to stay positive, and I don't have a lot of time. As you can see on the show, we're very, very busy. And last few days have been really crazy busy. When we get into the, we haven't really had a chance to fully talk about this between us off the phone. What's your take on the Showtime thing with Floyd?
You know, I mean, was it something that? You know, you said it, you know. I think you said it perfect, you know. Well, not even that. When we talk about boxing in general, is there a certain loyalty? Absolutely not. There is no loyalty in boxing because there's no affiliations. There's no organizations. We're not talking about an organization that is like a WBC. I mean, the WBC or anything like that. We're talking about... an organization that brings a large amount of funds that's going to keep a player in a position where there's trade-offs. You know, a lot of times you see players, they get trade-off because of not performing or they're slipping or age. Boxing's a lot different. We're seeing slippage with Floyd Mayweather. Let's be honest here. We're starting to see a lot of slippage. So only in boxing, where a guy that's showing age, he can slip out of a contract or whatever the case is to go to another network to make a major fight deal with another network and be solid with it. That's what's surprising. That's something that a lot of fight fans need to sit back and think about. That this is kind of weird. Think about this, you know. Joe Montana, if he was slipping away – could he have left the network that was broadcasting his football games, his Super Bowls, and go to another network and be able to take that large amount of money? No. Negative. Wouldn't have happened. That's the difference with boxing.
Well, it might be similar in this sense that a lot of people are talking about the 6 fights and the $300 million Floyd wins again. And I'm not trashing it, dude. That is serious cash. And it's a great deal that he's pulled. I think it's a very smart move. But... you know, you got to look at it like it's probably incentive-based. He's got to actually do those fights in 30 months. And he hasn't fought more than twice since 2007. And even before that, he was fighting fairly sporadically those last years. Once he moved up in weight to, I think, 140, everything kind of slowed down. And so you kind of wonder. I heard whispers about, an injury to him, to the shoulder, that he's having trouble with. He's 36 years old. That's the bottom line. And when people say, you know, He doesn't have a lot of miles. He hasn't got hit. I mean, you're looking at the fights. You're not talking about the gym. Those miles count too. And sure, he takes long breaks and heals up, but you're also playing Russian roulette, as Floyd or as Oscar showed us, that when you take those long breaks and you come back, you're diminished. Every time you leave the gym and you know, it's like the opening of Apocalypse Now. Every time I'm in this hotel room, I get weaker. And, you know, the longer Charlie stays in the bush, he gets stronger. And it's true of boxing. There's those dudes that are always in the gym, working, grinding, hungry, moving forward. And then there's you. And as big a star as you are, and you get to call the shots and pick your opponent, the bottom line is that you've got five more guys you got to fight after Guerrero. I believe it's five after Guerrero. And the opponent selection is getting tougher. And you're getting nothing but older.
I just want to throw this out right now. That the Twitter bullies have blocked me.
Aww.
Sensitive.
Who really loses out of that deal? The guy that actually gives good information and good interviews.
Wow. God, you blocked me, guys? Really? I mean, isn't that what you guys name yourself, the Twitter bullies? Tough guys. Like I said before, Twitter and Facebook is the nerd's yearbook. It is. It truly is and stuff, you know?
And
guys, thanks.
You call yourself a Twitter bully. You're not like the Twitter badass, you see. Bullies generally get punched in the face with facts or literally punched in the face, and they back off, and that's exactly what these guys have done. So, I mean, it's like the chef from the Bay Area. I invited him to intelligently come on and back up the claims that he's made about me. I've named them. They're numerous. And where is that guy now? He's probably just complaining somewhere in his miserable life. And he's blocked. He's gone. He won't come on the show. He's a coward. So I don't even bother listening to him. But this Floyd thing, don't you think we just kind of mentioned this to each other. This, and Jake Donovan actually wrote a really nice column about this. This is kind of like the Showtime Tyson deal. He was old. Everybody went, oh, my God, he's always been with HBO. People are afraid of change, and they kind of freak out. I mean, I tweeted that Floyd was going to Showtime, I think, a week or two ago. And now he is. But he's a 36-year-old free agent moving on to lesser pastures. Is he going to improve their brand, Showtime's brand? Yes, he is. But they didn't, as Jake pointed out beautifully, Showtime didn't exactly capitalize on having Tyson. They got stuck with a lot of bad fights because of that deal. And I'm very curious to see what leverage that deal gives Floyd and Al Heyman and everybody over there at Showtime. Is it going to be a good deal? Or is it going to be one of those deals where you're like, good Lord, how many more months of this do we have? You know, are we in month 27 yet? I think it's too soon to say the game has completely changed. I mean, I think in some ways, HBO could be breathing a sigh of relief and go, thank God, we're not held over that anymore. I know they want the money, but pay-per-view money is different than regular TV money, regular subscriber money. So, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting deal. I'd like to get some distance on it and see how it really changes. I mean, everybody thought Pacquiao moving to Showtime was a big old deal, and it really didn't turn out to be that much of a deal at all.
Right.
So, we'll see.
Well, let's pass this to Fight Fans really quick before if we call Tavares Cloud here on Leaving the Ring. Area code 209. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. Area code 209. What's up, brother? No, probably just tuning in and listening and stuff. Area code 916. Area code 916. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
You guys what? Got me. It's Stephanie.
Oh, hey, Stephanie. What's up?
Hello.
I'm listening in, guys.
I'll put you back on hold really quick, okay?
Thank you.
Believe we have another area code, 916-284. You're on live right now in the living room. What's on your mind? Area code 916-284. Probably just tuning in and listening. Area code 954. One, you're on right now. You're on live right now. Leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm just listening, man.
All right, brother. Thank you, man, for tuning in.
All right.
You know,
you can call. You can. I'll talk if you want. I'm just listening.
No, I know. We're gonna call in right now.
You're hot right now. I'm not gonna make you mad, Dave. I can tell you want to go in on these guys even more.
No,
like,
you know what, man? It's just, you know, I treat people with respect.
You
I always do, And, you know, I met these guys at a fight, and, you know, hey, man, I was cool with them, and they were cool with me. And, you know, I mean, I just think it's kind of low that I don't say a whole lot. And people that know me, if I go in on you, it's going to be behind the scenes, and I'll call you out, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, when you try to do it on Twitter and you try to do this, you know, and then you continuously – I mean, what you have to say is what you got to say. Like I always tell folks is that I can't control what you say. But don't put me in that category or don't think that I'm the influence of what's going on, because a lot of the times, you know, you have your thing with certain folks, and I try to stay out of it because I don't think it's fair. You know what I mean? It's not fair. I mean, you don't fight my battles. Why should I fight yours? You know, it's one of those things, you know, unless there's some harm there. If I feel like, you know, you're going to cause some harm, I do intervene. And you know that about me. I have intervened in other things. But I have these guys saying that I'm making fun of a certain name that I've created. I made that name. Sorry, guys. I even said it on the air, Gabriel. You know, when you were saying that, I said I don't really condone that because I made that name. You know, but and you're going to continue. Now you're going to call me a Twitter warrior, really? Wow, I have never been known for something like that.
No, I'm actually, you actually have to look at my history lately. I haven't been in a Twitter war in a really long time. I'll vehemently like maybe two tweets, boom, and I'm done. Like this is my point. Maybe I'll do a tweet longer if it's going to be something. I'd like to dominate the timeline other than during the show. You know?
I think that it's funny that, you know, goofy dude's trying to make fun of me. And, I never made fun of the way you look or whatever, whatever it is. But you're going to make trying to make a joke out of me? Really? Come on, guy. One dude, you look like you need to go to rehab from eating. The other dude looks like he got kicked out of a biker's gang because he just wasn't that cool enough where he didn't have a bike. You're going to make fun of me? I mean, there's plenty of things I could say. But I never did. Did I see you guys take shots? Absolutely. And what is this whole thing about being media? Hey, man, it's not about being media. You're going to continue making a bash.
That's just the argument.
You know?
It's stupid.
And then you have a kid that's probably about 14 years old, Rosales, who doesn't have a dad, who wishes he had a dad. You know, I mean, if he did, his dad taught him how to be a girl. You know what I mean? I'm about to be a little girl. The guy doesn't have any. He doesn't have anything. He can't even post him. He can't even put his own face. That's, dude. If you really got to be that ugly that you can't even post your own face on Twitter.
Wow. No, that cowardly. That guy's.
You know. Rob Riddler, myself, Blood. We've definitely felt faceless cowards before, and they're like every other faceless coward. You call them out, and I've called them out in the past before. You know, this guy told me "F you" out of the blue. Never said nothing. I've never done anything to this kid. "F you," David Duenas. Why? What have I done? All I've ever tried to do is bring the sport of boxing to the ears of people. Because you know what? When I'm a fan, I'm a huge fan, and I just didn't feel that at the time when I was doing it that nobody was doing that. But you're gonna say "F me." So yeah, man, I went at him. I took a shot because it's not the first time. Kid continuously does it. But I know he's about 14, 15, probably lives with mommy and daddy. Doesn't live with daddy. Because I know how I tell my sons, my boys, you know, if you're going to do something, there's no need to say it. Just do it. That's men. That's how we do it. I'm a grown-ass man. I got a 21-year-old boy. I'm a grown-ass man. I ain't got nothing to prove to any of you little punk-ass kids that make hashtags, trying to look hard, trying to up your ego. You're talking about upping your ego? Really? You better check yourself. There's so-called older men. I know what I got between my pants, homies.
Well,
anyways, this, like I said, I just can't stand people like that, you know? A bunch of two faces. Smile in your face, and then they do something else. You know, come on, man. I'm not here. I've told your partner before, and we did it behind the scenes. I'm not stealing anybody's. I'm not taking away from anybody's paycheck or from their table. I do this because I want it. I don't get paid to do this. I'm a fight fan. This is what I love to do. Don't get mad at me because I was doing something before anybody else was really thinking about it. Because there was a couple other people, too, on the internet that was doing it before me, on the grind, on the ropes, Jenna, the female. There's other folks that were doing the same thing. And you got to give them kudos. Pedro Fernandez, great guy, man. I mean, I know a lot of folks don't like him, but he's always treated me well. Ringside Boxing from Monterey, California. Guys have always treated me well. And I've never had anything bad to say about them. I never felt like I needed to step on their feet, or except for on the grind. I mean, they took shots at me first, too.
I think it's just funny. No, I mean, the bottom line, I guess, where we're kind of just on this. Well, we got to call in Cloud here in a minute, but
I'm going to call him in right now because
those guys, and they're probably listening, even though they're saying they're not. And I'll just say this. Ask your boy
why I don't come around.
Ask your boy why I don't really hang out anymore. And ask him in front of, like, Steve, or ask him around one of the other dudes that knows why. And watch his reaction. And watch how he won't be really to fully answer that question, because he'd have to expose himself as the liar that he is.
I just find that funny. The guy's like, you know, one guy, what's his name? Dan, whatever you want to call himself, the reject bike rider, tells me when he sees me, if you give away shirts, I'll wear them too. Okay. I was like, okay, well, all right. I mean, what do you want me to say to that? And the very first time you do it, okay, it's cool, man. I understand. Great. I got it. Back up your boy. I understand that. Don't pull me into it.
Hello?
Can I please speak to Tavares Cloud?
This is he.
Oh, man. You know what? I can really hear the aggression out of your voice, brother. This is not Bernard Hopkins. I hope you know that.
Oh, that's cool. What's going on?
It's going good, man. This is Dave Dwinnis with my partner Gable Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. How's everything going for yourself, man?
Everything going good. You know, just getting prepared, winding down for March 9th.
Let me ask you this really quick. I'm going to start the interview just really fast because the curiosity of fans and even some media. The thing is this, is that some fans and even media are saying they really feel and they think that you're not going to win this fight. You got to clap and that this is as far as you're going to get. What do you think about something like that when people say that?
I mean, that's great. For me, that's a great position to be in because I always do good when my back is against the wall when I'm the underdog and things like that. So, I mean, I'm just using it as motivation.
That's just plain and simple. Just looking at that Campillo fight, a lot of people are kind of upset about it. And, you don't do the judging. So it's always kind of unfair, I think, to any fighter. They're like, oh, that guy's bad because the judges saw it your way. But when the bell rings, you know, do you just know? Did you have a feeling like, you know, this wasn't my night?
Well, that fight right there, I was, you know, it was an off night for me, and the off night came from having an off couple months prior to that fight. So,
right.
you know. It is what it is, and once again, you know, people, they have their opinions, and, you know, me as a man, the only thing I can do is learn from my mistakes and keep pushing forward. You know, I can't dwell on that.
Do you think, first off, with Campillo, I mean, this is a completely different style from Bernard Hopkins. I mean, Campillo is more of a mover, boxer. Bernard, he's a guy that he does maneuver, he does have good movement. But he does like to flirt with that in the pocket deal. Does that play into what you want to do?
Maybe it does. You know, but no. My plan for this fight is to beat Bernard Hopkins in all areas. inside the ring, whether he's in the pocket, on the inside, whether he's on the outside, whether he's trying to move around. You know, I'm just going to win the fight conventionally through and through, and that's how I'm going to come out with the victory.
What is your thought about when Bernard, I mean, cause you know what, when Bernard Hopkins had to fight Chad Dawson, obviously it was because in order for him to get Pascal, he had to sign all that. And so many folks assumed the fact that, you know, he really didn't want to fight Chad Dawson, which was a big guy, had, you know, tremendous athlete, knew how to use his jab, southpaw. The boxing skills were obviously there. But with yourself, it, you know, it's a little different. And a lot of folks' assumption is that he likes to, in his career, in his age now, he does the pick'em fights. Do you think that you're a pick'em fight, or was this a forced fight for him to take on?
I really don't know. Maybe he did see something in that last fight that I had. But, you know, I'm glad I did get the fight. You know, but I don't know. I don't know why he picked me. You know, they said in the press conference, you know, they have respect and they're not paying any attention to the fights prior to this. You know, I don't try to figure it out. You know, what I do is when the bell rings, I go in there to do my job. You know, that's what I do.
A lot of what Bernard does is like kind of almost the illusion of fighting. There's like 20, 30 seconds of action, and then there's a lot of posturing, feints, and a lot of stuff. Is it? I've always kind of looked at you as a guy that could just kind of get right through there and force him to fight.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. If you look at Bernard Hopkins' fight, Bernard Hopkins, he doesn't fight the whole round. He doesn't fight 3 minutes of every round. And, you know, he does all the acting and the playing to the crowds and the judges and all of this stuff. You know, you just got to go in there. You got to make him fight. You know, you can't let him tie you up and start all that bullshit.
Right.
You know, you just got to be really, really blunt with Bernard Hopkins, with your fighting style, which is good for me. And you know, you just gotta go in there and beat his ass. That's what you gotta do. You know, I'm not trying to get caught up. I'm not gonna get caught up in, you know, what everybody's saying and oh this and that and how big the fight is. You know, I really don't give a damn. You know, what I come to do is whoop his ass. That's what I come to do. You know.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I always kind of picked you as that guy to, I mean, when I was looking at maybe the fact that Hopkins is kind of avoiding you, and I always thought your style, because you're so aggressive, and it is no frills, it's just like, am I going to finesse you, am I going to do this or that, I'm just coming at you, I'm going to beat your ass. I mean, you do it, I think, a little more intelligently than just that, but it is a very straightforward style. Were you able to learn anything from Dawson? Because it seemed like Dawson, well, it wasn't the most aggressive win ever. He did kind of expose some of that. Like, guys kind of wait. Like, the way they waited with Roy, they would stare at the speed. And there's kind of an aura about Hopkins that gives people pause. Do you think that it's kind of been broken now at this point and you can just go get him?
I feel like that with any fighter. You know, that's just that's just the way, you know, I'm the type of fighter like this. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your reputation is. You know, I come to fight. You know, it's not going to be any ducking and dodging. You know, I don't believe the hype. I don't believe that he say, she says. I'm just a fighter that just, you know, I come to work. You know, I come to work and get the win, you know. But Bernard Hopkins, I mean, he's a 48-year-old man. I mean, and he talks like a legend, but he doesn't fight like a legend. You know, I'm just going in there to do my job.
He seemed at times a little bit in a Campillo fight. Not to harp on it, but it's your last fight, so it's what we have to last go on. you seemed frustrated kind of late in the fight and dealing with a pure boxer. I mean, I don't think that Campillo, he probably is more active like offensively than Hopkins. He's a little more well-oiled than Hopkins is anymore. But were there things that you could that you learned about yourself that you think you can carry over into this next fight?
Most definitely. I mean, I learned something from every fight. And, you know, the main thing I learned is I learned how to prepare better for my fights and be ready for anything. You know, that's one of the few things that I learned. But, you know, it's I may have looked confused, but it's not as confusing as it may look. You know, it's very simple.
I don't, you know, spend a lot of time with you, so I don't know all your facial expressions. You know, we've got to go on what you do in the ring. You know what I mean? I actually haven't seen Tavares' confused face yet, so I'm just taking wild guesses. You switched from Albanani to a new trainer this time out. Did you just feel like you needed to shake things up? Why did that?
Hello?
He said, why that change? With the
okay. I was, you know, for a long time, you know, with me and Albanani, what would happen is that, you know, I had been talking to him for years about, you know, doing different things and, you know, switching things up a little bit. And, you know, he'll be like, okay, you know, at the beginning of the training camp or before we start training for a fight. And, you know, the closer we get to the fight, he just goes back to that old, you know, old school 1-2-1-2 again, you know. And this wasn't the reason that me and Abernathy broke up. You know, we broke up for other reasons, but this is one of the reasons that I went on ahead and made my decision to switch trainers. You know, the decision was made.
Well, go ahead. I understand that need to kind of grow and change, and, you know, shit gets stale after a while.
Yeah, you most definitely have to keep changing, especially when you got a target on your back. And, you know, I ain't got nothing against Banani. You know, he's a good trainer. You know, you just, when you're underneath the microscope, you can't keep doing the same thing over and over, you know. And there's that amongst other things. And I made a change to Abel Sanchez. You know, I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm having a good time with him, big guy. It's cold as hell, but I'm having a good time.
Well, Tavares Clout, man, hey, we wish you all the luck in the world. Man, we're going to really be paying attention for this fight. And I hope you're victorious in this one. I think Bernard needs to be put in retirement, man. I think, and nothing against him. I've always been a fan of Bernard Hopkins, but enough is enough. Don't you agree?
I agree. Get to the fight early.
Well, you had the chance to, if you want to give away, I understand, but you're up in Big Bear. I'm just curious who you've had a chance to work with up there. That's a nice little squad out there.
Yep. Look at
the
I'm up here with a couple guys. I'm up here with a lot of champions. You know, like the Nana Golovkin, he's up here. You know, I had a chance to work that guy. You know, I had a chance to work with a lot of Russians up here. I don't remember all his names, but, you know, they just like family, you know. But it's definitely some good work up in Big Bear. If anybody want to come up there, you know, all weight classes.
Cool. I have to get up there myself and check you guys out. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right,
bring headgear and a mouthpiece.
He's going to be more than a headgear and a mouthpiece. He's going to be full of vests and stuff, man, to make sure he don't take those shots from you. All right, you take it easy.
Y'all take it easy.
You too.
Yeah.
As far as Cloud. Wilde is going to be facing Bernard Hopkins says get there early because it's going to, you know.
Bringing my piece to Big Bear?
I know.
As if I do. I mean, at least I, you know, maybe have a shot of being able to take his power.
Exactly. Stay on the line, everybody. We're going to be doing our fight schedule, and then we're going to be pulling in some calls here on Leaving the Ring. We got Iron Boy Promotions fighters that are going to be calling in through right now. All right, we're going to be patching in right now. I believe we got Carlos Castro with us here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live.
Oh, what's up, man? How you been?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. So I'm hearing that you're being trained by Oscar De La Hoya's old trainer.
No, that's my friend Francisco Cerevaca. That's Pachito.
Oh, see, she's throwing me out some wrong information here by accident and stuff, which is your publicist and stuff. So tell me about yourself here really quick, because I know you're a young fighter, a young father, and I've heard there's a lot of promise with you right now, right?
Yeah, I'm 3-0 right now, you know. I'm a father of a 2-year-old son, you know. Had him young.
Let me ask you that. How do you fit that? Because, you know, when I was a young father, too. You know, I had my first child at 19 years old. And I got to tell you, I had a lot of dreams. But it was hard for me to fit my dreams in because I had to make sure that things were done right and, you know, food was put on the table. How difficult is for you to be focused, make sure you're doing the right things because there's no mercy in boxing, and just to balance that out?
Yeah, you know what? Boxing is my dream. You know, it's my goal. It's my number one thing. And, yeah, I have a lot of support from my mom, my dad, people from the gym, you know. They all support me. So, yeah, it's kind of hard. But either way, there's, like you said, there's no mercy in boxing. I come and do what I do, you know. When it's time to hit the gym, I hit the gym hard. Give 110% the best I can.
So, when you talk about family being there, which is, I think it's very important that family support it, family are going to be part of it. Are they contributing when you have to take the break from being a dad, when being a father, okay, going to the gym? So, did they contribute in that, meaning that they help out with your baby at 2 years old and look after the baby while you go do what you need to do in order to make sure that you're prepared for the ring?
No, well, when I talk about family, my wife comes to me at the gym. She works out too, you know. She works out. She supports me on everything. She brings me, she takes me, she drives me everywhere I need to be. And another part, yeah, everyone from the gym likes my son. They love him as a son to them. So my son comes over to the gym too some days, and he comes to have fun, you know. They all support me on that.
Dude, that's I love that. You know, when I used to go to the gym too and spar and work out, I used to take my little ones. So they basically grew up in the gym as well. And I honestly think that is the best way of getting your kids involved in what makes you tick. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree, you know, but I can't rush him. He's barely 2. If he wants to box, he's going to box. If he wants to do another sport, I'm going to support him. You know what I mean? Like, they supported me, I'm going to support him.
Absolutely, man. For our listeners right now, right now we have Carlos Castro, who's going to be fighting on the Iron Boy Promotions. Hey, tell us about yourself. Like, you know, did you have a long, extensive amateur career? How did you get involved in boxing? And what do we look forward to seeing in what you're going to do in the sport of boxing?
No, yeah, well, I began boxing by my dad. My dad took me to a gym the first time. I was 7 years old, and to tell you the truth, as soon as I got there, my old trainer said, well, if you really got the heart, he put me in a spar, and I got my butt kicked. And after that, I learned my lesson, and that guy told my dad that if I wanted to go back, that if I really wanted to box, I was going to go back. And, yeah, I got right out of school, and I was ready to go train, and my dad was surprised because he's like, you really want to go train after getting your ass kicked? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I love that.
That's wow. A warrior, man. That's a warrior right there, you know.
There's something about getting hit in the face that either you really like it or you don't. Like, and hitting somebody back, either you get into fighting right off the bat, I think, or you just don't, you know. And obviously,
yeah.
You got dog in you. What is it about it for you that makes you love it and make you want to come back to it?
Well, for me, I don't know. I just have passion for it, you know. I just love the sport. I love the sport. I think the sport could take me real far, you know. Hopefully be someone big in life. Stop struggling. Make my mom, my dad happy. Make everyone that supported me happy on this.
Do you really look at it? I mean, is it for you? You know, some guys, they like the idea of being a fighter. They don't train 24 hours, you know, or you know, 365. They don't put the full thing into it. For you, is this something that you know you do whatever your day job is, and then you go hit the gym, or you hit the gym and do your job or whatever? Is this basically your full time career? The way you approach it?
Yeah. Right now, I work in the mornings, and after I work, I get home, shower, and hit the gym. You know, like right now, we're barely getting out the gym. We try to hit the gym hard, you know, as hard as we can, toughen up. One day will pay off.
What weight division are you fighting right now? Let me ask you that.
Super bantamweight.
And what division do you think that you're gonna reign at? Like, what's the division? And it's super bantamweight. Are you hoping to move up in weight? A certain division that you think that it is going to be good for you career-wise?
Well, right now, you know, we make the division easy, you know. We don't have to struggle by weight. We feel good. We feel fast, strong. We're just improving by every fight. So I don't really think we have it on mind moving up weight right now because we're hard. We're training hard. By every fight, I keep feeling myself stronger, faster, so I feel good at this division I am right now. I think I'll stay in it for a little while.
Well, there you go. Carlos Castro here on Leaving the Ring. He's going to be fighting on the Iron Boy promotionals fights up soon. Hey, Carlos, thanks for calling in, man, and talking to us here on Leaving the Ring, man. Wish you all the luck in the world.
Oh, no, man, thank you. And I'd like to tell my fans if they could follow me on Twitter at Castro Boxing, please, or on
Absolutely.
Facebook. On Facebook at Carlos Castro.
And we'll tweet that out right now here on Leaving the Ring. You know, and that's Carlos. That's on your Twitter. It's what, Castro Boxing? What was it again?
Yeah, Castro Boxing.
Castro Boxing. Okay, and we'll tweet that out really quick for fight fans to follow you and keep an eye out for you, man. And, hey, take care of that little one, brother, and call us back and keep us updated.
All right, man. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man. Good luck to you.
All right. Thank you.
Carlos Castro, follow him at Castro Boxing on Twitter, and keep an eye out for the young man. I believe we got our next guest with us who's going to be on the Iron Man promotional banner as well. I believe we have Michael Hunter. Are you there, brother, with us on Leaving the Ring?
Yes, Bounty Hunter's in the house. How's everybody doing?
Good, man, good. We're talking about Olympias. We had one earlier, and now we got EU. So tell us what you've been up to, and what does this mean for you to get in the ring here on the Iron Boy Promotions?
Oh, man, I'm elated, man. I can't wait to perform. Like I said, I went down there, you know, a few times, and they, you know, they just show great hospitality and just, you know, people in general, and especially as Iron Boy. And I can't wait to, you know, just express who I am finally. You know, in the amateurs, you know, I was a little more restricted and I had to be a little more disciplined in, you know, what I'm doing. But, you know, now I feel like a bird, you know, I can fly, you know.
What has been tough for you from being an amateur and going to pro? I mean, what do you like? Let me ask you, what are the negatives and positives that you've noticed and took witness of doing the transition from amateur to pro?
Well, the really good thing that I like about the amateurs is the traveling, you know? You get to meet new people, you know, the cultures. And I mean, I've traveled the world. I've been, you know, so blessed to travel the world. And, you know, I'm only 24 years old, and I've been all over the world. You know, some people don't get that in a lifetime. So that was one of the biggest things for me. You know, hopefully we'll continue to do that as a pro level. But that was basically, as far as competition, you know, like I said, it restricts me from, you know, being able to express myself. Because, you know, I look at it as an art, you know, and that's, you know, that's exactly what it is. So I wasn't able to, you know, they kept me restricted, like, you know, caged in. So, but, you know, in the point system and stuff like that, I had to basically follow by their rules. And the pros, you know, it's a little more different. There's really no rules unless the ref tells you, you know.
Now you're the son of Mike the Bounty Hunter, contender. He won the NABF heavyweight title. Rough and tumble guy, but he had really he had solid skills. You know,
right.
Good, good defense. Remember, he was a very good boxer. What about the game did you take from him?
I'm very similar to my father. You know, I think I just have the entertainment. If you ever watch my dad fight, he was very exciting and just. He was kind of crazy. He was borderline crazy to me, and you know, he said. But I'm the same way in the ring. You know, when I speak to you and I talk, you know, I got this big smile on my face, and when I get in there, it's just a totally different story. You know, I might be pacing, I might sprint to the guy. You know what I'm saying? And by the end of the round, you know, when the bell rings the next round, I'll sprint to him. And, you know, I just, like I said, I'm an entertainer. I like to be able to express myself, and that's what I'm going to be able to do, you know, come March 9th. I'm elated. I can't wait.
It's interesting, too, the time that you talk about the entertainment value, and just like the different names. I mean, maybe it was just the 90s, but I mean, your dad fought Keith Sir Jabalot McMurray and, you know, Will Hammer Hilton. Kind of my personal favorite, Marion the Creep Wilson. What do you hope to bring to the game? Right now, I mean, it's obviously you're turning pro. You kind of find your identity, but what do you think that makes you unique?
Like I said, my style and just the way, you know, I come out in the fight, you know what I'm saying? I love to entertain. You know, I really, when they ask me to fight, you know, when I was able to get on the Iron Boy show, and my main concern was, you know, what song am I going to come out to, and how's my outfit, you know, going to look. So, like I said, that's my biggest thing is, like, I just like to have, I love what I do, and I do what I love. So, I just really like to entertain, and my style in and outside of the ring, I think is going to bring fans in, you know. Whether I get the knockout or not, people are gonna. When you come out of the show, they're gonna be talking about me for sure.
Right. A lot of people were talking about you, for a long time before I ever had a chance to see you. I remember my old friend, our late friend Emmanuel Stewart, would talk about you as a guy that he saw as very possibly a future top guy, if not a title holder. But you're a traditional sized heavyweight in a land of giants. Do you think that you're gonna have to rely on being small, or is it gonna be your defense? What aspect do you think you're gonna have to, or is this gonna be styles make fights and we'll see?
Yeah. My greatest thing in the ring is my mind. So it's just gonna depend on the fight situation, and you know, I like to be that. You know, I like to be, you know, some type of the underdog. You know, the little guy that beat a big bad guy. You know what I'm saying? So I've been a heavyweight for a long time. You know, I've had 115 amateur fights. I was a super heavyweight in the amateurs, and also a heavyweight, which is a cruiserweight in the pros. So I've always had and fought big, big guys. You know, it's always been
right.
Something I've been, you know, so I'm kind of used to it, you know. So I like to, because, you know, like you said, I'm fighting like a giant, you know. It's like you know, I'm able to get around them. They don't know where I'm going. I might be behind their back by the time they turn around, you know.
That's very true. I mean, like, it was actually, we were talking yesterday at the gym, and me, I'm like 5'9", about 43 right now, somewhere in there. And so when I spar, I prefer actually bigger guys, though. I feel more comfortable with a bigger guy than the guy that's my size just as fast. I like the bigger guys because they are slower and they are plodding. But you're also a long way away from talking Klitschko or even talking Deontay Wilder. So how fast do you intend to move? I mean, do you want to go 5-6 times a year and just get as much experience as you can? How do you intend to approach your development?
Oh, man, if I could, I would like to fight 10 times this year. you know, or you know, start off at a faster pace, maybe fight, you know, starting my 8 rounds, 10 rounds in my next couple fights, you know. I'm just ready to go. You know, I'm ready to entertain. I'm ready to excite. And, you know, I'm ready for the world to watch me. And I'm ready for, you know, I don't want to, I want the fans to be pleased, you know what I'm saying? And it's about time that the fans be pleased about a heavyweight, an American heavyweight, you know, regardless of if I'm knocking people out, but I'm entertaining, you know, and that's what I'm going to end up bringing to the table.
I'm excited, man. Yeah, I enjoyed your work in the amateurs, and I think a lot of people were really down on this Olympic team, and I just thought, when I looked at the team,
right,
you guys were just very young, and also, you guys don't have the money. We had someone from USA Boxing come on. You guys just haven't had the money to fight internationally. I think that's the thing that our team was really lacking, was that experience. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. That was the biggest, like, to me, because, you know, I was you know, the 2008 representative for the Olympics as well, but so I was already kind of, and I started, once I started fighting, I had you know, a lot of international experience, and I think that's what definitely our team lacked. You know, a lot of the guys that were they were young, but they were also young as far as experience being international. You know, it was a different, it's totally different feel. You know, you got, you know, a different element, you know? So I just think that was our biggest downfall, like you said. And then in the money situation, they weren't able to fund us. They didn't, you know, they didn't have the funding to take us to these places. And then they had their own, you know, ideas of what, you know, we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. So I think it was just like a poor management and, you know, and like you said, the experience. You know, we should have been out there in camps. Even just out there, you know, if we were just in camp, maybe doing duels and stuff like that, I think that really did hurt us a lot, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Because it's not like, well, I think that, too, you guys weren't able to bring Mike Stafford with you. That kind of hurt. It just seemed disorganized.
We never really had a head coach. We never really did get a head coach. The guy that was there, the head coach wasn't able to work in our corner. It was a big mess, you know what I'm saying? So I think it was a team. It was a whole team effort, you know. And I think it was. It never really was structured, you know what I'm saying?
And, right.
And it made even the fighting team, you know what I'm saying, as far as, you know, I'm talking about as far as the business team, as far as, you know, the people on the Olympic team. It was, you know, we kind of feed off the momentum, you know, when one guy's doing good, and, you know what I'm saying, it was just, we're all hanging out with each other every day, and, you know, so one guy's upset, you know, it was basically chaos, you know. It wasn't, we didn't have a plan, and we didn't stick to it, you know.
Yeah, I think the last time we really had a gold medal was Andre Ward. And I remember talking to him and Virgil about multiple times about that run to the gold, and it was very organized. It was very well thought out. They had a plan.
Right.
They were at the weight that they wanted to be. Like, everybody was like, well, he fought all these bigger guys. He's like, yeah, but I didn't have to make weight all the time. I just got to 175 and was peaked out, you know.
Right.
All those things, yeah, I agree with you. I wanted to see it. That's why I didn't sit there and trash them and go, this is the worst team ever. I saw a bunch of guys that are going to be really good pros. They're all just kind of young, you know. What do you do to fix that then? I know Deontay works all over the world and gets as much work as he can. I mean, is that how you plan to do it?
Yeah. Well, I've also, like I said, I traveled the world. I was in the Klitschko training camp, which was in Austria. I've been over there tons of times. So yeah, definitely. Well, now, you know, it's a different element. Most of the big fights are over here anyway, you know. So, but yeah, just getting the experience is the best thing, because you're not gonna learn it. The best way to learn is through experience. So, I think, you know, just being able to travel and being under those hot lights, you know what I'm saying, and being over in somebody else's hometown, I think is It's a learning process and it's an experience. Like I said, I've been fortunate to already have got a lot of experience with that type of stuff.
Well, there you go. You know, Hunter, hey, man, thanks again. Thanks again for calling in, and we really look forward to your career and can't wait to have you back on here on Leaving the Ring with us.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. And I promise I will leave it in the ring.
All right, there you go, man. Hey, thanks, Katie.
Your Twitter or all that stuff, too, if you'd like, so we can get you followers and get fans connected to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My Twitter is mhunter@2012, which my name will probably be changing to be Champ or something soon. So my Facebook, Michael S. Hunter, follow me and continue to follow my way to the top, you know, and see me, you know, excite and shock the world. I can't wait. Thank you guys for having me, too.
Same likewise here, brother. Thank you again.
All right.
We're going to have another Iron Boy fighter here with us here on Leaving the Ring. And he's actually, you know, I got it confused and all that because, you know, their PR is texting me and we're throwing out a lot of information here. And he's actually being trained by Alcazar, who is the
trainer of De La Hoya. He actually had Robert Alcazar had Valero for a brief period of time and was working, still working with Jesse Vargas.
Yeah. You know, so let me put up. I believe we have Pochito with us here on Leaving the Ring. Pochito, are you there? Pochito, are you there? No. Pochito, are you there with us, brother?
Somebody pocket dial, bro.
I know. Yeah. Well, I know he's been on hold for a short bit here.
That was about to get reality show right there. In a second, I heard that toilet lid. mute. This could be terrible.
This could be really, 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 really bad and stuff. Let me see again. Pochito, you with us on live right now, Leaving the Ring, brother. Oh. No, he's not. Let me see if maybe he's on another one. It's like a couple 602. Pochito, you there? Brother on live, believe it or me.
Hello, this is Francisco.
Francisco, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing good, man. There's a few 602 numbers and stuff, so, you know, you might have been there, and I just didn't hear you, man. I apologize.
No, it's okay. It's fine.
So let me ask you, because you have the trainer, of, which is the ex-trainer of Oscar De La Hoya, and it's working with Jesse Vargas, Mr. Alizar. How is that working out for you, and how long have you been working with him, first off?
Well, I've been working with him, like, I'm going to say 2 months, and everything's going great. I'm learning a lot of new stuff that I never learned before. I'm saying that he's a great trainer.
So two months, who were you working with before? And before you even answer that one, why was the transition made? What did you think that you were lacking in the past and that you needed to seek a different trainer to bring him into camp?
Well, I need to get more focused. I need somebody that would push me a little bit more higher, because, like, be a different person. That's why I got a new trainer.
Well, talk to me about working with Alcazar. I mean, I've had a chance to watch him work a little bit. He's got such a big fight experience, the kind of experience you really can't get in very many places. What are the early things that you've learned from him?
Well, there's so many things that I never had learned before. He's teaching me a lot of head movement, movement to the body, movement to the legs, movement to the head. It's just like a whole different story with Alcazar. It's like starting from the bottom.
When you kind of began that process, did you guys start at the feet and kind of work your way up? Where did you start? Where did you begin?
Well, here's the interesting thing, with you, just to throw this out really quick, you were working with Roger Mayweather before, right?
Yes, I was working with Roger Mayweather.
So that's a completely different, just like Jesse Vargas. You guys went from Roger Mayweather. So were you and Jesse Vargas, did you guys know each other, and was he one of the influences why you left?
No, I just met Jesse at the Floyd Gym. That's it. But we just talked for a little bit. But I just went up to Roberto Alcazar, and then we had a meeting. We talked, and that's how I became my trainer.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, where did you guys kind of start with kind of rebuilding? I mean, is it really that much of an overhaul, or is it just little tweaks here and there?
It was like an overall, like a different whole new style, starting from zero. So my style is gonna be way different from now and on.
Now, you know, Oscar was known for the big jab, and that was kind of something he came with to Robert Alcazar, but.
Right.
Is that something you guys focus on?
Well, we're focusing on the jab, and we're focusing on a lot of stuff, not just the jab, more movement, more power, more everything. Everything's going to be way different. I'm just going to be a different Pachito for my pro debut.
How did you – let's kind of back up even further. How did you get involved in boxing, and what led you to Roger? Because, I mean, Hispanic fighter, that's usually not the first choice.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I was watching when I was little. I was like 5 years old. I was watching Vargas fight. He fought this Puerto Rican, Felix Trinidad, and Vargas got knocked out. So I told my dad, "Hey, take me to a boxing gym." So my dad tried to find a boxing gym. He did, and then they told me I was too little to train. But you know, I kept begging and begging until they let me train there. And from right there, I just started to fight, and they tried to take me out a couple of times, but they couldn't, because that's what I love to do. I love to box.
What is it about it that you enjoy? I mean, is it just, are you a natural born fighter, street fighter type of guy that they, you know, that you just take into it, or do you like the individual part of it? What is it about boxing that really, really speaks?
Well, boxing is just like, it's like my wife. Like, I love it. Like, it's just, I don't know how to explain it. It's just that I love everything about it.
For me, you know, the last guy we were talking to, not Michael Hunter, but right before that, Carlos Castro, he talked about just getting hit and kind of like, not so much liking it, but he just,
right.
He liked the whole thing. Yeah, just getting hit and getting hit. For you, is it like a rush? You know, a lot of guys talk about just liking being in the ring alone, and it all depends on them, and all eyes are on them.
Well, for me, it's just boxing. Like, it's like everything. Like, I like to go in, bang. I like to move. I like to do everything in the ring. It depends what kind of fighter I'm gonna fight, and that's how I'm gonna fight. I'm gonna fight. If the fighter's coming forward, I'm gonna move. If the fighter's going back, I'm gonna go towards him. It depends what fighter I'm gonna fight.
Is there like a style that you think that you haven't faced that you really want to, that you want to test yourself against?
Well, I already faced a lot of fighters that come forward, a lot of fighters that hit, a lot of fighters that move, because I already have 206 amateur fights, but turning pro is going to be a different story. That's why I'm trying to change my style to more stronger.
Is that why you got with Robert Alcazar, is just to try to change that? I mean, being with Mayweather and stuff, I mean, did he really have an amateur style to teach, or what do you think?
Well, he was like more speed. Everything was more speed with Roger Mayweather. So I decided to take another level up, get more, a little bit more power with Roberto Alcazar, a little bit movement, a little bit more pro style. That's why I decided to move.
Gotcha,
yeah,
man.
It just seems, I mean, I think it takes time, right? I mean, to find that chemistry and the thing that really just kind of clicks in with you. Do you feel very comfortable with Alcazar at this point? Do you think this is going to be the trainer for you for a while?
Yes, I think so. I feel great with Roberto. He's an excellent trainer. He's really good.
We have Pachito de Vaca with us here on Leaving the Ring. He's going to be on Iron Boy Promotions fight. Weight division, Do you, what weight division are we fighting at? You're going to pro debut on, and do you plan to stay there very long? I asked this to Carlos Castro. Was obviously every time somebody pro debuts or begins a career at a division, they don't tend to stay there. They're looking at another division. They're hoping to grow into and be a force to reckon with.
Well, my weight is 118, and that's my normal weight. I think I'm going to just stay there for a couple of years, I guess, because I feel really strong in that weight, 118. So I think I'm going to stay there, try to be a champ at that weight.
Well, there you go, man. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I wish you all the luck in the world. I can't wait to see more from you, and we're going to keep a close eye out for you, brother.
Thank you for having time to talk to me.
Yeah, man, absolutely. We'll have to get you back, get that win, and we'll keep watching you from there. Good luck to you, man.
Thank you.
All right, brother. Take care. Francisco Monchito Del Vaca here on Leaving the Ring. Iron Boy Promotions. We're going to be posting up a little later what to look out for them when they're fighting in Arizona. So, man, it was great to have all the Iron Boy fighters here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Again, you got to download the app. You know, I know some folks are having problems with the website, but if you download the app, you're not going to have the problem and stuff. You'll be able to stream it live.
If you're listening to the show and you're having trouble with that link, and really what you should do is just download the app, because you're right. I checked it out, dude. I'm digging it. I'm really digging it. And there's some things we're working on, and Dave knows what I'm talking about, that it's going to be fun. There's going to be some seriously cool content on there.
Right.
Yeah, without question. But, you know, if you're just going to do it through the Block Talk, when you bring up the original player on leaveitintheringradio.com, you'll see that player. Just click on the words "Leave It in the Ring Radio" on the little link of the player. That'll take you to another page. You'll scroll down, and you'll look for the box that says Live over our logo. Click on that, and it'll take you right to the link. Or just go to my timeline, and throughout the time when I'm tweeting out everything, I generally click that link.
Go to the mobile link. I'm telling you guys, go to the mobile.
It's so much easier.
You can call us directly from the mobile. You can email us directly from the mobile. You can see what we're tweeting out at the same time. Here's the fun thing about it is that you'll know who's going to be on the show before anybody else, because it will automatically notify you on your phone. And like I said, there's going to be some content that you're not going to be able to hear here on Leaving the Ring, on our website or on YouTube or anything else that we do. It's only going to be strictly for the mobile. So go to your Google store, and all you got to type in is all capital letters, LIITR, and you'll be able to get on it and install it. The iPhone should be up and ready in the iTunes and Apple store by tomorrow or by Sunday. That's what I'm being told. That should be ready. But you can still download it. If you go to the website and you'll see the picture there, you click it, and automatically, if you click it from your phone, click that picture, it takes you to a link, and it says get it now. Here's the thing, though. You get it now, you're just not going to get all the features that we're offering right away, because it still hasn't went through for iPhones yet. But trust me, you're going to like it. You're definitely going to love the stuff that we're bringing in content. Remember the Hurt Business? We threw it out there on Twitter. Well, that's now going to be strictly for mobile. The series of the Hurt Business, the streams that we've done are going to be strictly for mobile. Other radio shows that we're producing are going to be strictly for mobile. Videos, content, some certain things, it's only be strictly for mobile. I'm really looking forward, like I said earlier, to the Boxing Blitz, because we're going to be doing something. We're going to be ingraining something a lot different than what you've seen of norm. It's going to be very interactive, and fight fans are going to be able to enjoy what we're going to bring. I'm not going to spoil it now or anything like that until you see it. Scotch Mob, if you guys are looking for somebody to represent your company or just up it up, bring some innovation to it, get a hold of Scotch Mob. .com and hiring them. I'm telling you, they put in a lot of work and they bring it. Anyways, we're gonna go to our fight schedule while Gabriel Montoya is looking up the fight schedule. We're gonna pass it to fight fans call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can talk to us here. Boxing. We got some predictions and some upcoming fights to talk about here on Leaving the Ring.
We gotta fly through this. We got 12 minutes left. This show flew by tonight.
Yeah, it did.
all that anger. We just, you know, Dave, I feel lighter. I feel like I had a meal, and it's, you know, and I've digested it, and it's gone. At the DC Armory, Friday night, February 22nd, on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights in Washington, D.C., Lamont Peterson, 30-1-1, versus Kendall Holt, 28-5. In something of a crossroads bout, you know, Peterson needs to come back and show that he's clean, and it wasn't, you know, there's nothing going on with him, and Kendall Holt, he needs a win, man. He's 31. This is his last shot at a title in some way, so maybe he'll get other shots, but I think this will be the last shot where he really actually can win. I'm going with Peterson. I think both guys are rusty. They've both been on. Peterson's been off since December of 2011. Holt, since March of last year, had a shoulder injury, fixed it, feels good. I'm still going with Peterson by decision.
You know, Holt definitely brings power. CT, which is one of our regular callers that call into the show and talks to us some, you know, and he was talking about the power there. And obviously that's something you can never undermine is what Kendall Holt can bring to the table. He's got power, especially in that right hand. He can really turn a fight around. I've counted him out. But with Lamont Peterson, who's a volume puncher, a guy that could take a big shot, a guy that we've seen get dropped and be able to recoup and get back up, it leaves the question, can he do it again? With the layoff and with the pressure of getting himself back in the mix of the names at 140, it lays down a ground that he's got a lot of digging to do to get himself, not digging, climbing to do. Let me rephrase that, climbing to do to get himself out of the hole that he had put himself in. Kendall Holt is definitely a guy that you could call what do you call the people that throw the dirt to the graves? I don't know. You know, a grave server. One of those kind of guys. So
he's a grave digger.
He's not definitely a grave digger. He's just the guy that fills the hole for the grave. So I don't even know what they call him. You're probably right. Grave digger.
I think you got lost in the maze of that metaphor, Dave.
I did get lost in that metaphor there, man. You know, because I was like, I started thinking about it. I'm like, wait, what is the metaphor for that? For those guys that throw in the dirt back into on top of the coffin here.
And he hits the squirrel on the head, and then it goes in the hole. Wait a minute.
I know. I wanted that nut. That just fall back into the hole. No, but with Lamont Peterson, tremendous skill, tremendous skills, tremendous volume, tremendous heart. But with the layoff, there's a big, tremendous gap of questioning. Can he bring that back, what he's lost in the time of layoff? Because Rust is obviously not going to be his friend on Friday night fights. That's a huge question. If he can shake off the rust and he can shake off anything else in terms of trying to prove, I think he does well. Because the word prove sometimes can make you take a backward step.
And here's the bottom line, too, is prove. You know, with the cleanliness thing, I mean, you know, DC Commission, I've kind of been over this and we're just into the fight predictions, but it really is on them to have, like, target tested it and done something more extensive than what they did. They just kind of licensed him and brought him in for this title fight. And I understand they don't get a lot of him. This will be the second one in 18 years or 19 years now. It'll be the second title
right.
fight in DC. But still, the Commission's just... Steve always says this, and Bob Arum says this, let the regulators regulate. Yeah, but what if the regulators don't? And what if they suck? And what if the fact that these regulators have dug us into the hole that we're actually in?
Absolutely.
What do you do then? In support there, Ramon Morales, 14-0, versus Jesus Hernandez, 10-0-3. Let's keep moving through it. Let's get to the marquee matchups. The Morongo Casino in Cabazon, California, home of the Dinosaur Museum. And that other dinosaur, I don't think you can go in that one. On Showtime Showbox. Art, I grew up with those, right next to Hadley.
Right.
Man, you get the date shake. I'm telling you what. Art Hovahkiene. Man, I pronounce this and I practice. Art Hovahkiene, 15-0-2, which is... Alejandro Perez, that second H is silent. Alejandro Alacran Perez, 16-3-1. Tough fight. Alacran can't afford to make any mistakes. He's got to avoid the uppercut. I think Art is going to outbox him and get that decision.
Unfortunately, Alacran is that there's no maze with his style. He is who he is. His nickname is Alagran because he likes to go to the body. In order to go to the body, you got to get in the pocket. And if we talk about anybody, any fighters that need to live up to their name, you know, with, like Ricky Hatton being called the Hitman, he had to live up to that. He had to be the guy that got hit a lot. Alagran has to live up to his name of being the Scorpion because he has that Scorpion hook. It just perfectly, he's able to turn it and hook right into the body, and he lives up to that. But here's the downfall for it, just like Ricky Hatton. You know, where it wasn't really, I wasn't making, it was a joke. He was, his nickname was Hitman because he had to come on top of you. He had to be the Hitman and destroy you. But sometimes making those type of commitments, you leave yourself vulnerable, and you end up leaving that slug trail that can be traced where you know exactly where you're going to go with each punch. Alagran is the same way. He leaves that trail of slugginess where you're going to see exactly what he's going to do, and you know exactly what he's going to do because he's not going to bring anything different. He doesn't trend away from his nickname, and that means to be in the pocket and try to throw that Scorpion left hook the body. He's got to really change himself against Art. Art, I think you're absolutely right. He's going to outbox him, outmaneuver him, because he knows what's in front of him. There's no need to change his color. Alakran, he needs to change his stripes. He needs to change his name of an animal. He's got to be more of a tiger. You know, move in and out, claw when he needs to claw, and bite when he needs to bite.
I agree. I think Robert Alcazar is on hold. Somebody just, Emily just tweeted that to me. I don't know. I didn't know he was coming on. The surprise Robert Alcazar guest.
Are you Robert? Robert, are you there? No.
Willie Fortune is in support. 14-0 versus Toriano Johnson. I'm going with Toriano Johnson in this. I think Willie is going to be unfortunate. I don't think that his opposition, while Toriano is younger, he's got that background. And you know what? He just kind of, I wouldn't normally say this, but he just kind of won me over in an interview. I just think he's, you know, I've heard actually a lot more about him before I ever saw him fight, before I ever met him. I kept hearing about him. And finally getting to see him, finally getting to interview him, I don't know, I'm a believer. I'm excited to see me some Toriano Johnson this weekend. I think he gets a stoppage. At the community center in Palm Bay, Florida, Jose Nieves, this will be on Telemundo, 21-2-3. Versus Danny Flores, 14-2. In support there, Junior Dorticos, 13-0 versus the dreaded Tom Bob Anderson. Moving on to Saturday night, February 23rd at the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, Michigan, on Showtime's World Championship Boxing. Cornelius Bundridge, 32-4 versus Ishkay Smith, 24-5. Ishkay trying to become the first Las Vegas native to win a world title. Tough fight to call. I'm thinking I'm going Smith by decision.
You know, I was asked this earlier too, the same thing. You know, what do I think, Bungridge or Smith? Here's the thing with Bungridge is that he's been active, and his style hasn't changed. He's a guy that likes to kind of maul you up and punch in the inside. He's got good power. He just crowds his punches. A lot of the times, he likes to crowd his punches. Smith is a guy that he's been shelved. Whatever promotional company he's been with, he's always been put aside. Even with Floyd Mayweather, the money team, TMT, whatever you want to call him, he had one fight or maybe two. I believe it's just one fight, and not as active. The last fighter that Smith fought was not anybody that was ranked or anybody really you could really put any thought and say, oh, he's going to give him a lot of problems. It was a showcase fight. That's exactly what we got, a show and a case. I don't really know with Smith. I think right now, if you have to question who has been more active and who has been more consistent, you got to go with K-9 Bungridge. The dog is definitely has the bigger bite right now, where Ishkay Smith, to me, is a lot of sugar. I don't know if there's enough salt that it's going to be enough to put a halt to Bungridge's his streak of wins.
So we're split on that. All right.
We're split, yeah.
I'm going
I
with
Ishkay. Bungridge.
Ishkay unfollowed me, and he's angry at me because I'm not big on the Christians. But
he unfollowed me too, and same thing, probably. I don't know. But, you know, I've always been a big fan.
I'm going with Ishkay. You know what? I got to say, I still
I got to be real. I got about it. You know, I've always supported him, but I just think that
I like him. I was a little out of line. I was a little out of line, but
nope.
You know, I'm kind of rude about the religions, but that's a whole other show. And then we'll talk about that on my show, maybe on that'll be on the app if you download it. In support, we got 90 seconds. Jay Leon Love, 14-0 versus Derek Finley, 20-8. I really like Jay Love. I think we need to get him on the show more. I feel bad I didn't do a story about him this week. I got locked up with other things. I'm going with him by stoppage. At the Paramount Theater in Huntington, New York. NBC Sports, Malik Scott, 35-0 versus, these Russian names. Glasgow, 14-0. I'm going with Malik Scott. I'm feeling the funk with him. I think he's healthy. I think he's right. He's been giving people good work in L.A. It's Malik Scott. And Chris Algieri, 15-0 versus Jose Alejo, 10-1. I'm going with Algieri. And at the GMT Studios, Culver City, California, Chris Avalos, 22, versus Jose Araiza. And at the Echo Arena in Liverpool, David Price versus Tony, PEDs are okay and they should be legalized, Thompson. And that is your weekend fight schedule, although Johnny Gonzalez fights Sevio Osejo in Mexico.
Well, there you go. Again, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to download the app. And, it's always fun. And whatever our rant was, I know some folks enjoy the rant and some don't and stuff. But, you know, it needed to be done. Anyways, don't drink and drive. Enjoy the weekend with your friends and family. And we will talk to you guys soon on Thursday night next week.
Peace. Thank you.